using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's the 21st of October, year of our Lord 2021, day 584 of America Held Hostage. Today we're going to take a look at what they're doing in various companies. I've had a lot of people sending me company questionnaires and how they are trying to fight back against the religious exemption. You see, there's nothing that they can do about a religious exemption. That is an ironclad case. But we're going to talk about the devious tactics that they're using to try to remove it or to try to remove you after they're forced to grant it by harassment. Got a lot of documents here. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Also joining us today will be Brandon Smith, and I've covered many of his articles. I wanted to talk to him today because he not only covers the disinformation of the media, but he also talks about practical solutions and where all this is headed. But I want to begin today with the mandated Trump shots, or perhaps we should say the mandated firings, because that's what we're talking about. These are mandated firings. Biden is intent on burning down our system. He wants massive numbers of people fired. He has removed the unemployment benefits, and they have tactics and strategies to keep you from getting not just the extended unemployment benefits that were put in there by Trump. See, as I said before, to do this globalist lockdown, Trump used carrots. Biden is a stick man. He's coming here to remove this stuff. All right, you just stay home. We'll lock you down, but we'll give you lots of generous benefits. And, you know, if you do this and you cooperate with us, we'll give you a lot of money. That's a Republican tactic. Democrat tactic is we're just going to beat you into submission. That's where we are right now. And so they have ways to pretend that you are quitting, right? You are going to be put on unpaid leave. We're not firing you. We're putting you on unpaid leave. We saw this happening in Italy. Doing it across the board, unpaid leave. You're just in kind of a state of limbo, twilight zone, phantom zone, if you will. Well, you're not fired, but you're not working for us, and so we're not paying you and that type of thing. They also have ways to harass people endlessly. I want to begin with something sent to me by a listener who works for Bayer. And his comment is, this is a tyrannical internal document from Bayer regarding religious exemption. And you'll notice, we're going to go over this, there is, it's almost as if there was, I don't know, a coordination, shall we call it a conspiracy, to put this kind of stuff through. They are all using the same types of tactics. If you remember, it was a few weeks ago that this surfaced in a hospital, I think it was in Arkansas. And they had an individual, and it was widely reported by the news. You had Drudge put it up and said, this hospital administrator is asking people these questions. Here's a list of 30 products, common products, household products, some of them over-the-counter drugs. And these all used fetal cell lines. And so do you use any of these? Because if you do use them, then you're Your religious objections to these vaccines is phony. Well, that was a phony document. I looked at it and I thought, well, I just looked at a couple of the products on there, and I thought, well, that's a very underhanded tactic. And we need to just respond to people and say, well, I didn't know that. Now that you pointed out to me, I won't use those. End of story. People do things. I don't know exactly the background of all the products that are developed that I use, but somebody sent me a follow-up to that, and it turns out that it didn't originate with that hospital. It originated with a Catholic priest who was trying to push these vaccines. And what he did was a very sloppy, non-researched process where he went through and he looked to see if there was any mention anywhere, product by product. So he'd look at the product and then he would type in, you know, the HEK cell line that was has been there since 1963 with an aborted baby. And they keep that eternal cell line going. So he looked to see if there was any connection. All that meant was that didn't mean that the product was developed using that cell line. It meant that at some point in some time, somebody had done an experiment somewhere using the HEK cell line. And the reality is, and they said, look at this, look at these products. All of these things, most of these have existed by far and away. I think it was all but three had existed long before 1963. So this is easily debunked. You can't say that the fetal cell lines that didn't come into existence until 1963 and really were not widely used for quite some time after that, but you can't say if that cell line didn't come into existence until 1963 that these drugs that were developed in the 1800s were developed as a product of that fetal cell line. And one of the best examples of this is aspirin. And so this is an individual who works for Bayer. And I want to show you this religious exemption. So it's basically a form that has to be filled out online. And so they have a list of these 30 products or so. And to give you an idea of some of the nonsense of this, Ex-Lax, Pepto-Bismol, Preparation H, Tylenol, and Benadryl, and things like that, aspirin, and ASA, which is acetyl salicylic acid, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. But that is essentially the chemical component of aspirin. So aspirin is listed there twice by Bayer. And this whole thing has been debunked, but they say Bayer requires additional information to further consider your request for a religious exemption. Your request appears to be primarily based on your objection to the use of fetal cell lines in the testing, research, and development of the vaccine, and or your belief concerning the purity of your body. So we'd like to ask you a few more things here. And this truly is evil. Not only is it evil, but it's an outright lie. And don't tell me that Bayer does not know the history of their product. I mean, bottom line, here's the history of their product. Now just go to Wikipedia, right? Back in 1853, a chemist, Charles Gerhardt, developed ASA, acetyl salicylic acid, for the first time. In 1897, scientists at the drug and dye firm Bayer began investigating ASA, and by 1899, Bayer dubbed this drug aspirin and was selling it globally. But it goes back even to before that. Before they isolated that particular chemical, they were using willow bark, which is rich in that particular chemical. This goes back to 400 BC. It was not developed using fetal cell lines that didn't exist until 1963. The use of willow bark extract for its use in reducing fever, pain, inflammation goes back to 400 BC. They isolated a particular chemical in 1853, they called it aspirin in 1897. I'm going into this because, folks, this is being done to a lot of people now. This is not just this fake research. This is how they're fighting people. And I got a clip here, Jack Posobiec put out from the DOJ, and they were strategizing about how, well, we can't do anything to stop people's sincerely held religious beliefs. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to try to trip them up by putting out this list of products. Ah, we got you now, don't we? No, you don't, because that's a lie as well. It's a lie like everything you're doing. Everything from this pandemic to the vaccine to the effectiveness to the safety, every bit of this is a lie. And now they got another lie on top of that. So it is a lie, by the way. Aspirin was their brand name. ASA was the chemical name. They lost the rights to the trademark, or they were sold in many countries. But here is this questionnaire from Bayer itself to intimidate its employees over their religious exemption. they know that this thing goes back to the 1800s, and they put their product on the list. And not only that, but the generic chemical that's there. And you can dismiss the rest of these things as well. First of all, your response would be, and here's the questions. You've got to fill these things out online. They don't give you a lot of room to put a statement here. But you're going to see this from a lot of different people. This is being used by fire departments, police departments, not just Bayer. It's being used by hospitals. And this is total BS and lies. So this is an example of the questions. First one. Please state whether your religious objection to the vaccine is equally applicable to the above medicines. If not, please explain why. Well, your answer is most, if not all, these products were in use before the fetal cell line came into existence. And if any of these products turn out to be developed on the basis of that fetal cell line, I'll be happy not to use them. Next question. Please state whether you abstain from using all medicines and products. That's where you put the second part of it. You know. If they even existed before 1963, or if they even existed after 1963, it doesn't prove that they were developed using research and development based on the HEK cell lines. But if that's the case, I'll be happy not to use them. Thank you for pointing that out to me. Next question. Please state whether your religious objection to the COVID-19 vaccine is equally applicable to tobacco use, to alcohol consumption, to recreational drug use, or to taboos. Well, I mean, you know, you could say, I'm sorry, I don't really understand the connection here because none of these things genetically modify my body, which is what Moderna said they would do. Moderna said, we can do this very quickly because we can turn your body into a vaccine manufacturing plant. Well, I don't want my body turned into a vaccine manufacturing plant. I don't want my body producing a toxic spike protein. That is a violation of what God has designed in my body. Tobacco use, that is irrelevant. You could make that kind of statement. You could say, well, the overuse of anything, whether we're talking about sugar or we're talking about just eating too much, all things in moderation. And so you could even say that if you do use tobacco, if you do drink alcohol, you say, I look at all things in moderation. None of these things comes even close in nature to this new untested experimental genetic code injection or whatever. I wouldn't use the term genetic code injection with these people. But I would just say none of these operate anywhere close to this. This is a very radical new approach. And it is tampering with the fundamental aspects of my body. We're not talking about a product here that some people have identified as harmful to use excessively. And so then it asks a follow-up question about that. Well, if you do use any of these things, then please explain your contradiction to us. So each one of these things has a, you know, do you do this? Oh, well, then explain how this doesn't contradict your religious exemption to the COVID vaccine. Please state whether you object to other vaccines for the same reason. You base your objection to the COVID vaccine. If not, please explain why. And I'm telling you this because if you're in an employment situation, you're going to see this kind of thing being thrown at you. So be aware of this. If this is thrown at you in an interview, perhaps, right? Or an online question, I'm going to give you some answers that I think might be helpful for you. So do you have objections to other vaccines? Well, I think the appropriate response to that would be, I've looked at the CDC's data, and all the other vaccines over the last 30 years don't seem to have this kind of issue. But I would just say this is perhaps the safest thing to say, is to say that this is unlike any other vaccine. Other vaccines will give you a dead or weakened pathogen, whereas this vaccine, as Moderna has bragged about, it's the reason they could do it very quickly, this injection turns your body into a vaccine manufacturing facility. And it's not a dead or weakened pathogen. It's very active. So that is my objection to it. It is not a vaccine. I don't see this as a vaccine. Vaccines give you a dead or weakened pathogen so your body can naturally build up a resistance to that and a defense against that. Final question. Please state whether you've been previously vaccinated other than COVID-19 for flu, etc. If yes, please explain whether your prior vaccination conflicts with your professed religious belief. Again, same answer. You would say, well, I'm not aware of these other vaccines using that. If you have taken vaccines, And you would say, if I find that that's the case, I'll be happy not to take them as well. I've done my research on this particular vaccine, and what I have done in terms of my medical history is really not any of your business, frankly. This list, they said, is publicly available from numerous trusted sources. That's what they put at the bottom. So that they have a footnote for that. Well, here's a bunch of a non-exhaustive list of common medicines and products that have used fetal cells in testing, research, and or development. Footnote, this list is publicly available from numerous trusted sources. No, it's not true. None of it is true. It's been debunked. As I said, most all of the products on here were in existence before the cell line even came into existence. So it's total nonsense. But if you don't think that this is a broad strategy that's being coordinated out of the White House and with big business like Bayer Aspirin, let me play you the audio recording of the Department of Justice saying, let's use this exact technique of putting out this bogus list.
Listen to what this DOJ lawyer had to say about religious exemptions when it comes to the issue of abortion.
Cases. And for instance, in the New York case that's currently going on against the state of New York, the Thomas More Society is representing a bunch of doctors and nurses who claim that they would sin gravely if they acted in cooperation with the evil of abortion. How would they be doing so? The claim is that all three of the current vaccines either have fetal cells that were obtained by abortions in the vaccine itself, or in the case of Pfizer and Moderna, that those vaccines were tested using fetal cells that had been aborted. And even the connection to the previous testing makes them cooperative with evil in a way that their religion prohibits. I don't want to say anything too categorical, but I believe that when this claim will be very difficult for agencies to successfully claim that that's either insincere or non-religious, even if it is, even if we know that many of those claims are not sincere or are sincere but not religious. This is the most common claim you're going to confront probably. And it's likely that you will have to take as a given the employee's claim. Not always, right? One response that some hospitals have started to give is, well, do you know that Tylenol and Tums and Preparation H, those were all tested using aborted fetal cell lines too.
You hear that?
And employees will then say, well, I didn't know that, but now that you tell me that, I'll stop using those products as well. And then we will turn to what does the government have to do once the employee makes that showing? And here, basically, there is a compelling interest, obviously, in keeping our workforce and the public with which we interact safe from COVID.
So that was Human Events, Jack Posobiec, with that leaked tape of the DOJ. And you hear what they're saying. They're saying, well, you know, sincerely held religious beliefs are not really anything that we can question. Even if we don't believe they're sincerely held, we can't really do anything about that because you're not the judge of what my individual religious beliefs are. End of story. But he said there are some other things that we can trip them up with. Right? You know, we can use this list. So maybe that's how Bayer found this. Maybe the Department of Justice is telling the big corporations, here's what you do next. And this is not just being done there. This is an article talking about firefighters out in California and about the police department in San Francisco. They said 2 months ago, there were 500 unvaccinated members of the San Francisco Police Department. However, pressure from the city, from the department's leadership, and an antagonistic police union caused many officers to grudgingly take the jab. You know, the police union would not support them. We were granted about 150 religious exemptions. They were approved and permanent exemptions, said an officer who said, even after we got the religious exemptions, they yanked the rug out from under us. How did they do that? Well, he said they approved these permanent exemptions, 150 of them. But a month later, leadership effectively rescinded them by saying they needed, quote, additional questions answered. You know, like this. We've got a few more questions we want to ask you about this. Every application was subsequently officially rejected, said the officer. So they're using that as a gotcha question. This is one of their tactics to do this. And so the San Francisco Police Department is currently already short 400 officers. They don't care. I mean, they're letting people shoplift straight out of the stores, just like in Chicago. Now they've done that to the Miracle Mile in Chicago. It's now become a third world rat hole because they're just letting people go into these stores. It used to be very nice and just take out whatever they want. They said even before the pandemic, localities across the country were battling shortages of medics and of firefighters and of police. And so what do? Well, they just engage in mass firing of all these people that we're already short of. And this is what it looks like in Seattle, is you've got Seattle Fire and Police who are being fired because of their consciences. They're being fired. They walk up and just leave their boots there at City Hall. This is what is happening now across the country. One veteran Beverly Hills firefighter said, me and my coworkers never took time off because of stress. He said, we worked through the pandemic. When we got sick, we took COVID leave, and then we came back to work right after. It wasn't devastating for any of us. He contracted the virus on the job, he said, and he isn't necessarily opposed to vaccines. However, the aggressiveness of the mandates and skepticism about the pharmaceutical industry led him to request a religious exemption after he prayed about the issue. He said the Beverly Hills city bureaucracy swatted down the initial slate of applications for religious exemptions. The city implemented its own process to judge applications, which included religious tests to determine if one, in fact, is a true believer. He described it as an interrogation about his religious beliefs. I would suggest to you that this is, as I said before, you know, we want to write out what our religious exemptions are for this. You want to reflect on your life. Think about where you are. Your most important religious exemption is Christ, because you're going to stand before God, and you need to stand before God and Christ with your sins forgiven, with his righteousness imputed. That's your most important exemption, that interview, that judgment that's going to be there. But in terms of these exemptions, think of this as a Christian. Think of this as an opportunity to talk to these people and to basically put them on the spot as well. You're welcome to ask them some questions. You know, watch Ray Comfort. And you can get, well, have you ever told a lie? Have you ever done this? Have you ever done that? Well, you know you're going to die. And if the Ten Commandments is true, what are you going to do about this, right? The Bible is true. What are you going to do about this? Do you believe there's a God? Do you believe you're going to answer to God someday? You see, I answer to you right now, but you will answer to God someday. I mean, put it right back on them. I mean, they need to hear this. A lot of these people who are engaged in this, they have no fear of God. If they're trying to manipulate religious beliefs away from you and to try to violate your conscience. On the day the firefighters were scheduled to receive word about their exemptions, the Beverly Hills City Council member, John McRish, published an ominous memo in Beverly Hills Weekly saying, quote, "Religious exemptions are meant for deeply held and sincere religious convictions. They're not hall passes." Who said they were? You're the one treating them as if they're hall passes. I don't look for permission from you to do any of this stuff. I'm just telling you what it is. I'm telling you what the law is. Are you going to defy the law? Are you going to defy God as well? That's what you need to ask them. They're not hall passes for those who don't want to take the vaccine, however strong those feelings or whatever conspiracy theories they may believe. But I just have to say that, you know, in Beverly Hills and other places in California, if you have a strong conviction and a strong feeling that even though you're a biological man, you have a strong feeling and a strong conviction that you're a woman, oh, you better bow down to that, right? Do you understand where the religious lines are being drawn? Do you understand where we have to fight this? I mean, look at this. Anybody that says that they have a little bit of a feeling that they're a different gender, oh, you better bow down, you better use their pronouns, you better worship at their feet. But if you say, well, you know, I don't like the idea that babies were cannibalized for this, so we created transhumanist mice, because this is the this is why I had Julie on the other day from fetalindustry.com. because you need to understand that this is ongoing. This isn't something that stopped. It started in 1963, and these drugs that they're talking about pre-existed 1963, but it hasn't stopped in 1963. It's going on, and it's getting worse. Transhumanism, these hideous things that they're creating, all the product of abortion, murder for hire, abortion for hire. I mean, this is a heinous practice. And we're going to get to the point where there's not any of these commercial medicines that we're going to want to use. We're going to go back to using things like willow bark, if necessary. You see, these patented medicines, the truth be told, they're really imitations of natural things that have been there for millennia, that God has put there. These people have pulled it out. They have patented it. They have altered it in many ways dangerously and put it out in such a concentrated form that it becomes very dangerous. And perhaps we'd be better off not to just use these things. So that's an idea if you want to use that talking point. So they took the letter as a sign that they didn't have a fair shot, and they were right. Out of 25 applicants, the vast majority received only a temporary exemption for their sincerely held religious beliefs. And they said, we'll reevaluate that at the end of an interval. They're still thinking about how they're going to deny it. They don't give a fig about your religious beliefs. They don't care whatsoever about the First Amendment or any of the other many laws that were passed in order to clarify and to bolster that. They don't care about any of that. They're just looking at how they can get around all of that. So it'll be reevaluated at the end of an interval. Half a dozen applicants, including this firefighter, were outright denied. He says, I told the city, no, I'm not going to take it. So he said, the next day on Friday, they shot me a letter stating that I was going to be on leave without pay. See, this is the next disgusting thing they're doing. We're not going to fire you, so we don't owe you any unemployment benefits. We're going to put you on leave without pay. So not only have they taken away the extended unemployment benefits, but these people are working on a way. They've come up with a prevarication. As I said, it began. You've seen it done in Italy. It's happening everywhere now. To these firefighters, to the police, to all these people who are being the mass firing conspiracy coming out of the Biden administration, conspiring about how to do it there at the Department of Justice. And I call it a criminal conspiracy. And I'll say again, all these people love to use the term conspiracy theorist. And again, that was the FBI trying to come up with a pejorative term to dismiss anybody who did not believe that JFK was killed with a lone gunman with a bolt-action rifle shooting from behind a tree, in spite of what eyewitnesses said, what the Zapruder film said. They believed that there was a magic bullet. So, you know, when they create the term conspiracy theory. But conspiracy is one of the most common charges of the government when they indict somebody, because most crimes are planned. And if the crime is planned with you and another person, they call that a criminal conspiracy. This is a crime. And I just played for you how people in the Department of Justice are conspiring, working together on a criminal plan that is a criminal conspiracy. And they're bringing in these other jurisdictions, these other corporations into that criminal conspiracy to deprive you of even unemployment benefits, but also to deprive you of your God-given rights that are specifically protected by the Bill of Rights, by the Constitution, and by many, many other laws. So they point out, they said, there's been a lot of bullying in the firehouse, a lot of bullying by the command staff. The chief reportedly told one crew member not to bother submitting religious exemptions because they wouldn't be approved anyway. Now, you do it anyway. Even if you know that it's going to be hopeless, even if you know that you're working for a bunch of slimy criminals, which, you know, yeah, we need to have jobs and we need to have income, but you're going to find something better if you stand up for your principles. I guarantee you. But even if you know that they're not going to be honest about it, if you file this religious exemption and you do it on time and you do it the way that it's supposed to be done, now you've got a legal case against them. You've got a very strong legal case against them. And I think we're going to see a lot of lawsuits, and justly so. He said a higher-up told him that the leadership of the San Francisco Fire Department, during a meeting that he was present, said they had no intention of handling religious and medical exemptions in good faith. It seemed like a paranoid hearsay until the applications came back and all of them were rejected. As of October the 13th, of about 800 San Francisco City workers who've asked for medical or religious exemptions to avoid termination, not a single request has been approved. And then they point out that, one of the other things in terms of this criminal plan, this criminal conspiracy, they're pulling in National Guard to be warm bodies in hospitals because they don't know the system in the particular hospital. Not all these National Guards, as a matter of fact, many of them are not trained. But, they can put them in. I guess they can put a white coat on them, and they're immediately medical staff. That's what you saw in these executive orders. The governor of Tennessee, Executive Order 83, that was what that was all about. Same thing in Georgia. Those are Republican governors working with the Biden administration saying, all right, we're going to have mass firings, so make sure that you put out an executive order talking about how you're going to allow students who have not finished their coursework, you can let them step in and take the place of an RN who's had decades worth of experience, and we're not going to go through the licensing or the testing. We'll just skip and waive all that. We want to have a warm body in there and keep the hospital open so it can keep making money. That's the only thing that's really important, right? So let's just, take in a student. Doesn't say how much coursework they've got to have. But, if they're a medical student, maybe they just started. That's okay. You're now a nurse, right? No tests required. You don't have to finish your course of education. No, you're now a nurse. They said, and we'll waive the medical licensing things for people who are retired. Well, I don't really have a problem with that. These are people who know what they're doing. But they pulled in the National Guard. And so you've got 336,000 National Guard and 190,000 reserve troops will be given until the end of June before they have to get their shot. You see, they're doing that. They're staging it for them. They're delaying it for them. Because Biden wants to use them for a few months until they get over this hump, they think. And then they'll jab them or fire them as well. This is really criminal. It's a real criminal conspiracy. Fyodor Dostoevsky, this article by Pedro Gonzalez, he says, finishes it up, he says, Dostoevsky wrote, quote, "The degree of civilization in society can be judged by entering its prisons." He says something similar to that can be deduced about how we're treating the unvaccinated. The essential workers kept at their jobs before vaccines were available, yet they and their families are now suffering professionally, financially, for their convictions. Their unions are against them. Their superiors have turned against them. Their cities have shunned them. They served America, but America is turning its back on them. I thought where he was going with that quote when I read that. I thought, we are turning everything into a prison. We'll take away your job. We're going to take away your mobility. We're going to keep you under house arrest if you're unvaccinated. But, if you want to know what America is like, if you want to know what American civilization is like, just look at the stories about the D.C. jail and the January 6 prisoners. Or you could look at the communication management units I talked about with Dana Gottesfeld this last week. And so you have a lot of people are turning to pastors for help, for counseling, for understanding. And, they're getting stiff-armed. I've had people writing me about that. This article, churchgoers trust their pastor on vaccines more than politicians and the media, says the Pew Research Center poll. This is from ChristianHeadlines.com. Survey found that 61% of Americans who attend religious services at least monthly say they would have confidence in their own pastor to provide guidance about receiving the vaccine. And yet, when they talked to these people about what they had received in terms of guidance from their pastors, we're not even talking about help when you have when this violates your conscience, right? Instead, what they're saying is 73% of regular churchgoers in the evangelical tradition say their church has been silent on the issue, compared to 54% of mainline Protestants, 52% of Catholics, and 34% of Christians in historically black churches. Perhaps that is one of the reasons, more than even the Tuskegee experiments, that there's been reluctance in the black community, because they got pastors who care about their people, who care enough about them that if they see somebody that is about to step off the curb with a bus that's coming at them about 70 miles an hour, you would at least have the audacity to shout a warning to them if you didn't pull them back. I just don't understand these pastors, like I talked about yesterday, John Piper. How in the world could you sit there and not warn somebody about this? Not warn them about the risk that they're taking with their body. Not warn them about what is going on with this system, this heinous system. You know, I look at this and I say, well, you know, 73% of evangelical churches, and then it goes down, you know, to 50% or so of the liberal Protestants, and then about the same with Catholics. Why are they not talking about this? Because, you know, we had a lot of these churches shut their doors at the beginning of this. They were out of concern for health, wasn't it? Do they have any concern for the health threats to people in terms of these vaccines? No, not at all. Or maybe they just shut it down out of government obedience. Maybe they're being silent because of their cowering before government for approval. You know, now they're totally unconcerned about this novel new injection. And they're totally uninterested in the fact that there's been more deaths and injuries from these novel new injections than there have been from 30 years combined of all other injections, vaccines. And they have no ethical concerns about it either. Isn't that strange? I mean, don't you find that to be strange? I just don't understand why you would do nothing to protect people from something that, according to the CDC's own database, looks very, very dangerous in an unprecedented way. I don't understand how you could be that ignorant. I don't understand how you could allow the government to attack your fellow Christians who are having their lives destroyed economically because they have a conscience about using babies in a cannibalistic transhumanist way. How could you stand aside? Shame on you for remaining silent. But most of these churches have essentially remained silent for the last 50 so years with Roe v. Wade. Many of them have not really taken a position on that. So what do you expect? And you know, again, going back to this John Piper thing, this essay that he wrote really, really bothered me. It's really worse than what we've seen in the past from the Pope, from Al Mohler, from Franklin Graham. And I mention Al Mohler because he's, you know, the head of the biggest and I guess the most prestigious or whatever seminary for the Southern Baptist. But, you know, the Pope, Al Mohler, Franklin Graham, they're all just parroting out these government talking points, worshiping the miraculous vaccine, worshiping science, and just repeating everything that's out there. Piper was different. Piper said he put this out under the belief that people are not doing this out of conscience, out of concern. He dismisses out of hand any issues of safety. But he says, I'm talking to people who are not vaccinated because of fear being out of step with the people they respect. I mean, do these stories that I just gave you, does that sound like these are people who are doing this out of fear of man? Are they doing this out of some kind of a groupthink? Because, you know, they don't want to go against the Trump cult. Or they don't want to, you know, all the Make America Great people. You know, I've got this MAGA cap. And John Piper's attitude with all this is that he thinks that the people are doing this because it's some kind of a right-wing cult, a groupthink, that there's peer pressure, that people don't want to do this. I mean, how clueless is he? Well, he's very clueless, actually. So he's not going to offer any comfort, no support for their conscience. He doesn't think they could have a conscience about anything. They're just, you know, part of a right-wing mob. And you don't have to be a part of that right-wing mob. You are free, free from these political considerations. And I just have to say, is John Piper free of his politics? Has he looked at anything? And he quotes five different news articles to say, well, it's clear, you know, these vaccines are the elixir of life, essentially. Nearly all COVID deaths in the U.S. are now people who are not vaccinated. You know, quote CNN on this. Well, that's not true. Does he even know how they define vaccinated? In other words, if you've got somebody who goes in, they get a vaccine, they're dead within 48 hours, immediately, you know, their body starts freezing up and tingling and they can't move and their face drops down and they're dead in 48 hours. You know, that person, that's not somebody who died from the vaccine. They're not vaccinated. They ignore that. You are not considered to be vaccinated, according to these people, until 2 weeks after your second jab. Or 2 weeks after if it's Johnson & Johnson. So first of all, you know, there's that. There's the VAERS data. He might want to take a look at the fact that everywhere where people have been vaccinated the most, that's where they're having the worst problems right now. It seems to be directly correlated with the vaccine. But, you know, don't bother to look at any facts. Just tell people, if you don't do what CNN says, it's because you're right-wing lunatic. So get rid of your political convictions, is what he's saying to them. And don't be held hostage to it. And I certainly don't want people to be held hostage to a political party or to a politician or to anything else like that. You've heard me say that over and over again. But we need to be held to our convictions and to principles. And he's just throwing those out, not even considering that that is an issue. So, you know, we look at this, and I think about how profoundly insulated and how profoundly ignorant John Piper is about what's going on with these vaccines. I want to play for you a little, this is a video, and I'm only going to play a part of this. They did this as an experiment, and you'll see them at the beginning of this video. They go and they talk to a bunch of people, and they say, are you pro? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Even late term? Oh, yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't do it, says one person, but, you know, that's something that you should have the ability to decide yourself. And then they show them a short video where you have a gynecologist explain abortion with animation to them and show what's happening. I'm not going to show that to you. It's too disturbing. I couldn't watch the whole thing. Now, I challenge you to look at it. This is the response of these people after they have seen what is really going on. Every day in America, there are 2,363 abortions. We ask Americans in major cities for their thoughts.
What are your thoughts about abortion?
I think that the women should have the right to choose what they do with their bodies.
I have to second that 110%.
I'm pro-abortion. People should have the choice if they're not ready.
Would you both support abortion all the way up to the moment of birth?
Oh, yeah, I do. I do, yes.
I have nothing against it, and I think, you know, it's a right and a choice for people to exercise it.
I personally wouldn't do it, but, like, I wouldn't restrict anyone.
Pro-choice, for sure.
Okay, now they watch the video, and they're going to ask these same
people. In one word, can you describe your thoughts on what you saw?
Disturbing.
Barbaric.
Yeah.
It's a form of, like, just taking life and just throw it in the trash. That's too much for me. I have children.
No, I don't think any kid, any baby, any infant, I mean, you know, any fetus should go through that. No.
That's not okay. That's not okay. That changes my opinion.
The videos that you guys show me has changed my mind.
Seeing that was, like, really sad.
So would you change your mind?
My name is Dr. Anthony Levitino. I'm a practicing obstetrician gynecologist, and I've performed over 1,200 abortions. Today I'm going to describe a second trimester surgical abortion called dilatation and evacuation, or D&E. A D&E is performed between 13 and 24 weeks of pregnancy.
And that's where I'm going to stop it. If John Piper knew a fraction of what is being done, because that abortion that they do there is not even the one that is used to get these organs that they're harvesting now, that our government is paying in a murder-for-hire scheme. If John Piper was not so profoundly disinterested and ignorant, yet he's writing op-ed pieces about this, I think if he saw what was happening, he would have been moved to tears, like some of those people. Ignorance is no excuse. John Piper has said that. He said that about people and their involvement with God. You know, when you stand before God, you're going to say, well, I didn't know. It's not an excuse. You'll be held accountable. You'll be held accountable, pastors, for not warning people about what is going to happen to tens of thousands of them died. 2.5 million in Europe alone, only half of the European countries disabled with these things. Have adverse effects, not all of them disabled. About half of those are serious. If you know better, you're responsible. And you're responsible if you want to willingly remain ignorant. There is no opting out of this aspect of it. A St. Louis veteran newscaster, Kim St. Ange, I think is how you pronounce her name, leaves KMOV after 10 years. Posts lists of abuses that she was forced to endure after being granted religious exemption for vaccines. So let me ask you, I'm going to play this story for you. And let me ask you, do you think, as I play this story, that this person, John Piper, was the kind of person that he described? Oh, yeah, just part of the right-wing cult. You're free of all that. You don't have to worry about politics and stuff. You're free of that. Go ahead and get the jab. You should get the jab, he says. You are free. The children are free, he says, over and over again. A reason to be vaccinated. Freedom. Freedom. Yeah. So this person, the St. Louis broadcaster, said 10 years of reporting. She posted an account of the abuse. She said, I could have gotten thousands of dollars if I would have signed the non-disclosure agreement to remain quiet about my firing. But she said, I chose not to. She said, my nearly 10-year career in TV news is over. No, I didn't quit. No, my contract wasn't up. I was let go over the vaccine mandate. Here's what happened. My religious exemption was approved only after getting a letter from a pastor at my church. My company, which owns KMOV, then informed me that I'd need to follow these policies, and there's three of them. Number one, I'd have to wear an N95 mask at all times. Number two, I'd have to test twice weekly and take a time-stamped picture of the negative tests. Again, is there any science to either of those? We know that an N95 mask doesn't protect against this virus. It doesn't protect against spittle for more than about 15 to 20 minutes. In 2003 in Australia, the Trade Commission there threatened people who were selling those N95 masks as a prophylactic for a virus. They said, that's fraudulent. We know that. We've got the data. And if you do that, we're going to fine you up to $100,000 for telling people that an N95 mask will protect them. And here's some of the data. It says that after, first of all, the aerosol virus is so tiny that there's no way it's going to be restricted at all by an N95 mask. Secondly, in terms of spittle particles, after 15 to 20 minutes, the mask is so saturated that that doesn't happen either. It just pushes out the spit particles that are already there. Get pushed out as well. Smaller particles that are going to be traveling farther and remaining airborne longer. So I said, if you do that, that's fraudulent, and we're going to fine you up to $100,000. So the N95 mask doesn't work. If you think that testing somebody twice a week is going to work, how would that be effective? What's going to happen in between? You're talking about days. First of all, there's no passing along of this unless you're symptomatic. And people who are vaccinated can pass this on just as easily as people who are unvaccinated. And then there's the third one. Whenever there was an on-site meeting, I had to be on-site, but I had to attend it virtually. In other words, I had to sit in another room. And she said, and this is where I drew the line. And this is what proves that it's not just about health. So I'm testing twice a week. I'm wearing an N95 mask, but I can't sit in the same room as my vaccinated colleagues who, we now know, can not only get COVID, but can pass it to others? I informed my union representative that I did not agree to following those policies, and I was let go. I turned down a non-disclosure agreement worth several thousand dollars not to be silenced. But this is too big to stay quiet. Our freedoms are being stripped away. Freedoms our parents and grandparents and so many others fought for. Many people, including doctors and nurses, were hailed as heroes in 2020, but now they're among the unemployed. I refuse to stand for a company dictating medical decisions for its employees, especially when it comes to an experimental vaccine. I want my future kids to know their mom stood up for their beliefs, their morals, even though it cost their mom her job. To all of you, thank you for welcoming me into your homes. Thank you for sharing your stories with me. While this certainly wasn't the way I expected my career in TV news to end, as a follower of Christ, I know God has a purpose to this and will use it for good. Do you think she did that at that great cost to herself? Because, as John Piper said, you know, it's just about being part of a political movement, and you don't want to be embarrassed because your peers don't want to get the vaccine, and so you've got to be a part of that club. No, he says you're free. Let me say this. Nobody is going to be free. We're all going to go into slavery if we don't stand together against this. We'll be enslaved. Our children will be enslaved. Our grandchildren, great-grandchildren will be enslaved. And she wants to know, she wants her children to know that she stood against this. Whether we win or lose, we're going to stand against this. And our children are going to know that we stood against this. It's absolutely unconscionable to me. And you look at some of these woke pastors like John Piper and the Gospel Coalition. They're all about reparations. They're all about this and about that. They're not cloistered away, completely cut off from the world they live in and social concerns, but they're not concerned about the social aspects of this vaccination program either, are they? This see no evil. So, that's the other tactic. So you notice that there's several different tactics that they're doing. Number one, they can't deny your religious exemption. So what they'll do is they'll try to trick you up with a bunch of lies about 3 dozen products that they say were developed with the 1963 fetal cell lines, and that's a lie. The next thing that they will do is they grant the exemption, and I read this already from a listener, they will harass you endlessly until they drive you up. Same types of things that were done to this reporter. I read you that, was it yesterday or the day before? Somebody who was a listener said, yeah, they gave me the religious exemption, they had to. But now they're putting a mask on me. They've got me completely isolated from everybody else. I'm an outcast. I'm a pariah. And so that's to get you to quit. That's what they're doing. And I would suggest that you do quit after you get something else lined up under those types of circumstances. You don't want to work for a crooked employer like that. But that is really what they're doing right now. That's their tactics. That's the approach that's been war-gamed out by the Department of Justice on down, giving that out to the different corporations. Can't do anything about the religious exemption, but we can make their life hell and drive them out. So Orange County, Florida, a battalion chief, firefighter, had this to say. This is from a longtime listener, sent this to me out of Orange County. Said, our pompous mayor is mandating the vaccine for our firefighters. This battalion chief was fired for refusing to comply and sent me his Facebook post. I'll just read you a couple of things he had to say in it. He said, I've been a medic for nearly 21 years, serving in the U.S. Army at the young age of 17. He said, when I was promoted to sergeant in 2003, one of my pilots on the Black Hawk I was assigned to said something to me that stuck, and I have adopted as my own saying today. Now listen to this, because this is very, very, very appropriate to what is happening in all this. He said, Sergeant Davis, get people to work for you because they want to, not because they have to. And in the end, you'll have a better product. And when I say you want to have an employer that you want to work for, try to find that. You know, do what you have to do in the meantime to try to do this. Do not compromise your conscience. But, you know, if there's going to be a situation where they're harassing you, keep looking for another job and move on, because there are people out there who are worth working for. Yesterday, around 1500, I was brought into headquarters to receive my termination papers. This is unprecedented from what I've been told. Now, listen to what they did. He refused to obey illegal orders. And he points out that they have He said, I knew this was illegal because he said, I was given paperwork in the afternoon to issue to my personnel, which I discovered had many inconsistencies, and the list that I was given had names on it, which I knew from personal conversations that these people had requested religious exemptions. And so he said, this is a violation of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which bans discrimination by employers on the basis of race and religion and many other things, color, sex, so forth. And so he quotes that in there. Now, he said, we also have a situation under Rule 33 in the Standard Operating Procedures about an unlawful order. And by the way, this applies to the military as well. You also have those in the military, probably in the police as well. It says, disobedience to unlawful orders. It says, no employee is expected to, nor shall obey any order that he or she knows to be contrary to federal or state law or county ordinance. So he says, all right, so here's the law. You're not supposed to discriminate people on their, based on their religious beliefs. And I'm not supposed to aid and abet you when you do that type of thing. And so he said, that evening, I was given a direct order by the chief to issue these unlawful reprimands. I explained again how these violated several laws. He said, I won't get into all of them here. But he said, that evening, I was relieved of duty with pay. The next afternoon, I discovered through an email chain that the head of human resources had written that all these written reprimands would be stopped and returned. So he says, he gives this to me in the afternoon. I said, well, that's not lawful to do that to people, and I'm not going to obey an unlawful order. All right, you're fired. The very next day, he finds out that Human Resources said, you can't give these reprimands out to people. You got to get these things back and undo this all. It was an admission of guilt and of wrongful discipline by the fire department. It violated federal law. It violated the impact bargaining agreed on by the county government and the union. This incompetence and the lack of attention to detail is insulting. But he said they would not reverse the action for him. Even though he stood up to an unlawful order, which the next day Human Resources said, you can't do that. They fired him for not obeying an unlawful order, and they would not reinstate him. I'm making this promise, he says, to everyone, that I will ensure that those who have violated the law, county ordinances, standard operating procedures, rules, and regulations, will be held accountable. It is my responsibility, as it is with my peers, to question those policies that violate law, human rights, and present unethical situations. We say in the fire service, risk a lot to save a lot. This is that time. I've committed to something. I believe it's wrong and will be rewarded with the end results. This is what we must do. This is from another listener, nursing home desk. He said, you talked about a gentleman in a nursing home today. That was yesterday. Resigning for his morals. I have a similar story here in Michigan. Our best friend's daughter, who we see weekly, told us that the three nursing homes that she is administrator for normally have die-offs in December due to the residents being lonely, doing it due to it being a special holiday. This year, however, they had a 50% die-off shortly after they rolled out the vaccine to the residents. She is now worried for her own health, as she has taken the shot earlier this year and has seen the death that it brings. On a side note, the vaccine killed my father in August as it caused a response that made his lungs fill with fluid that they could not drain it enough before he passed away. It also killed my wife's cousin at 44 from a heart attack, and my daughter's best friend's brother at the age of 24 died from myocarditis and a heart failure. All of them had the Pfizer poison. Our whole family had COVID, and although the symptoms were the strangest, we survived, and I would not even say that it was on that it was a 5 on the scale of 1 to 10 of the flus that we'd had. The swine flu was twice as bad, if not worse. So he says, also, my mother-in-law and her boyfriend were fully vaccinated and got COVID, and both ended up in the hospital. He has been there now for a month. So we look at the political side of this. And as I've mentioned many times, you know, whether you're talking about free speech or you're talking about now these mask mandates or these vaccine mandates, the libertarians at Reason and the libertarians at the Cato Institute are completely clueless as to where to draw the lines. And so there's this article from Reason Magazine saying, criticizing Greg Abbott for finally doing the right thing. The vaccine order that says that you will not fire people and you'll not keep people out of your business because they're not vaccinated. Reason thinks that is wrong. They say that is just as oppressive as Joe Biden's mandates. So what they're saying is you can't tell somebody to require that, and you can't tell somebody not to require that. In other words, businesses are more important than government, and I would say that's right. But now what is happening is you have the position, the ludicrous position being taken by Reason, by Cato Institute, these other think tanks, same position that they took about your free speech, your God-given right of free speech recognized by the Constitution. What they're saying is that the business's rights trump those of the individual. And let me say that is just as reprehensible as this Democrat idea that this nebulous thing we call public health, that is more important than all the individuals that make up the public. So we don't need to be concerned about the health of the individuals that make up the public. We have this nebulous abstraction that we call public health. And if some bureaucrat says, well, what I'm doing is to support public health, they don't have to be concerned about trampling the health of any individuals. And so what they're saying is that corporations can, that's what the Democrats say about public health. And what the libertarians are saying about individual rights, well, you know, we got these corporations, and the corporations should be able to do whatever they want. Democrats say government should be able to do whatever it wants. The libertarians and conservatives will say corporations should be able to do whatever they want, because it's not just Cato Institute and Reason. It was also the Heritage Foundation, the biggest conservative think tank there is, that took that same position on free speech. Well, you have these corporations, and they should be able to censor people in the public square. Even if the public square is privately owned, again, going back to Marsh versus Alabama, back in the 1940s, even if the public square, as it was in that particular case, it was a company town, they owned everything. They said, get out of here with your religious flyers. Took it all the way to the Supreme Court, and they said, even if it's publicly owned, privately owned, the public square is a public square, and you can't kick people out. And that is the principle on which we've said you can't exclude people from Walgreens because they're black, or you don't like their religion, or you don't like their vaccination status. But you see, the conservatives and libertarians think that we should let these abstractions called corporations rule us, just like the Democrats think that the government should rule us in all things. Both of them trample on the rights of the individual. So they said, they quoted Greg Abbott. They said, private businesses don't need government running their business, is what he had to say. And, you know, quite frankly, we also don't need our corporate masters running our lives either. He said, no entity in Texas can compel receipt of a COVID vaccine by any individual, including as an employee or as a customer. Abbott likes to brag about his state's business-friendly climate, said Reason. But even before last week's order, he was not prepared to let businesses decide for themselves how best to address the COVID-19 hazards. And they'd excluded it. They said, well, you're not going to exclude customers. Now they're saying you're not going to do this for employees. You know, when I look at this, I just have to ask the question, at what point do we push back against the rights of corporations, trampling the rights of individuals? And let me give you an example. Let's talk about the casting couch, for example. You know, if you want to work for a movie company, or you want to work, I don't know, it could be any kind of a company, and they say, well, I'm sorry, but, you know, you're going to have to, let me sexually assault you. Do we allow the corporations to make that kind of determination? Is this not an assault? Is this not rape with a needle? It is rape with a needle against your body. And I don't think that corporations should be allowed to demand that they inject me with an experimental genetic injection, any more than I think that some corporate master has a right to tell me I got to take off my clothes and put out. Because that's what this is. There's no doubt that the sniffer-in-chief, Joe Biden, loves these mandates so much, these pervs. Mandated injections, or, you know, your just call it your injection rape. That's what we're talking about here. I've used the analogy before, but that's just really more like rape. I've used the analogy to say, well, if a corporation says they want to have my car, should they just be able to come over and take my car? I mean, even if you owe them money on your car, they've got to go through a legal procedure and due process. These people don't have to do anything now. Just take whatever they want from you. This is what's happening with the corporations. And the Republicans and the Democrats are just facilitating this. And libertarians. So this is what Reason goes on to say. So, well, that position that has been taken to protect our right not to have these experimental injections forced into us, that position sacrifices property rights and freedom of association on the altar of unlimited freedom. See how confused they are? I just got to say, you know, libertarians have seemed to understand this for a long time, saying, you can swing your fist as much as you want, but your right to swing your fist stops with my face. It does not include swinging it into my face. And I got to say, you know, you can sling your injections all you want, but your right to sling your injections stops with my arm. That's the principle here. You clueless people. Abbott's order, they said, is no less outrageous than Biden's plan to dictate employers vaccinate people. See, we should just be ruled by corporations. This is what comes from an Ayn Rand libertarianism. If you don't understand the foundation of our country as expressed in the Declaration of Independence is that we have individual rights because we are created by God. We're created in the image of God. We have a certain dignity, each and every one of us. And the purpose of government is to protect the individual's God-given rights. But that comes from a Christian perspective. You will not find that in Ayn Rand. No, no, no. She celebrates greed. This is a, you know, it's a dog-eat-dog capitalism. She embraces that. She said, oh, yeah, that's great. That's great. We should have that. You know, may the best and most exploitative person win. Whoever can buy off the government is really what this has come down to. Because, you see, it isn't like we've got these two different groups. They're conspiring together with each other. One of the ways that these corporations are able to do what they do is because they're doing it in partnership with the government, and they get paid off for doing that. We don't have a competitive free market anymore. We have Wall Street. And Wall Street and government are unlimited amounts of money for these people, and they don't care about serving the interests of customers. They're concerned about how they're going to get their money. Their big money is coming from Wall Street, and it's coming from the government. And the rest of us, especially as they start to close the loop now on their monopoly situations with shortages and supply chain issues forever, now they're really their only concern is pleasing the government, pleasing Wall Street, and the customer can go fish. The COVID-19 vaccine is safe, effective, and our best defense against the virus, but it should always remain voluntary and never forced, said Abbott. When you say that, it's safe, it's effective, it's our best defense. When you say that, you're only throwing red meat to these drug czar dictators. These are the people when you say, well, if it's so wonderful, why don't you mandate it for all these stupid people who are too dumb to understand how wonderful this elixir is? All right, we're going to take a quick break so I can get a drink of coffee here. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about some politicians who are doing some good things at both the national and the state level to stop this tyranny. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary.
but each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, quick update. I was just told by Travis that we're having problems with DLive. It's nothing on our end. It's on their end, and it's having some issues with the video. I guess this is a good time to tell people where they can find the video. If you look at thedavidknightshow.com, you'll find links to the podcast, the audio podcast, as well as to the video archives. We have those on four different platforms. We have it at BitChute, YouTube, Odyssey, also at Rumble. It's kind of hard to find at Rumble there. It's not under The David Knight Show. It is under Roundtable Report. But also on the video platforms, we do cut out shorter segments. We have the full three-hour show up with time codes as to different topics, so you can jump around. If there's something that you're not interested in or something that you are interested in, you can jump to that spot there. And we spent a lot of time putting that together. I hope that is a useful thing. People should let me know if that's a useful thing, because I do spend a lot of time on that. So we have the time codes there. We put that on the podcast as well. And but we also have the live platforms, and you can see the program at aftermath.fm, also on APS Radio, as you just heard. We're working on getting on some other platforms as well, and we'll make those announcements to you soon as to where you can find us. And before we move in to the bills that are being introduced and some political maneuvers to shut down these, and I'll call them the mandates to fire people, you know, the mandated firings as opposed to the vaccine mandate. Before we get into that and other aspects as well, because there's other mandates that are coming for travel, I just want to give a shout-out to people for prayer requests. This is a supporter of ours. It goes by the internet name of Wolfman Jack. His son has always wanted to be a Marine, and his son was pressured into getting the jab as a Marine, and his father is very concerned about that. And so he asked for your prayer. So please pray for Wolfman Jack's son. God is capable of protecting us. And not everybody has adverse effects to this. And so just pray that he doesn't have any immediate effects to it. Pray that he doesn't have any long-term effects of this as well. And we pray that for many, many people because we don't have to be proven right. I don't want to see this happen to anybody. I'd be happy to be proven wrong, except we've already seen too much be reported into VAERS database. But Wolfman Jack's son in the Marines, if you could pray for him. We have Madison Cawthorn. This is the very young, newly elected congressman out of North Carolina. There's a guy that's in a wheelchair. He and Mike Lee on Wednesday, yesterday, introduced bills in the House. So Cawthorn did it in the House. Mike Lee introduced it in the Senate. These bills would ban federal COVID vaccine mandates for interstate travel. For interstate travel. And I said, this is coming. And I said, when you look at the way they're rolling this out, and they're doing it gradually, they're doing it iteratively, as Fauci said. It is first to be done to the crew of the planes. And then they do it to the staff of all the air, everybody that works for the airline. Then they do it to the passengers, and they do it internationally, and then they do it domestically. And of course, Jen Psaki has already said, when asked about it, you know, are you going to do this? Are you going to mandate this after they mandated it for international travel? Are you going to mandate this for domestic air travel? And Psaki said, we haven't taken any options off the table. But let me tell you this. An interstate travel mandate will not be limited to airplanes. It'll be there for planes. It'll be there for buses. And once they figure out how to do it, it'll be there for cars. It's going to be hard for them to enforce it with cars, but they will try. And so this needs to be stopped on principle. The bill is titled Let Me Travel America Act. And it would prevent the Biden administration or any other administration and any federal agency would be prevented from requiring vaccine passports for interstate travel, transportation, or movement. And I'm glad to see this. Finally, we have some people who understand what is at issue here. And not only that, but taking preemptive action to block it before it happens. Because typically what we've seen with all this is that, you know, they can see it coming. I can see it coming. They can see it coming. You can see it coming. And they don't do anything. They wait till it comes out. Then they wait another couple of weeks. They wait a couple of months. If people are angry enough, then the GOP would say, well, you know, that really isn't a good thing. We'll have to think about doing something about that someday. So I'm glad to see that Mike Lee and Madison Cawthorn, good for them, send them a letter, tell them you support them, but also send a letter to these other GOP people, tell them to get off their duff and do something to protect our God-given liberties in the Constitution for once, for once. In Wyoming, you got lawmakers are going to consider a vaccine passport ban at a special legislative session. And they point out that this is only the second time that they've called a special legislative session in Wyoming. This is a very rare event. They said they're going to debate two bills. They're going to be doing it between October the 26th and the 28th. Two bills be debated that aim on protecting citizens from being coerced into getting vaccinated or barring them from participating in the economy. The third bill would fine or jail any government employee who attempted to enforce federal vaccine mandates. Again, this is in Wyoming. Good for them. One bill being drafted would ban vaccine passports, said the Associated Press. Associated propaganda. Another would impose a $500,000 fine for firing, demoting, promoting, compensating, or refusing to hire employees based on vaccination status. That's really good. I mean, they covered all the different aspects there. So demoting or promoting, paying people extra as an enticement, and also making it a penalty for the people, you know, well, we'll give you a raise if you do this, or you're not going to ever get a raise if you don't do it, that type of thing. So basically have the bases covered on that. The third piece of legislation would provide for fines and jail for any public servant who tried to enforce federal vaccine mandates. A local Wyoming news site said the anti-discrimination law would punish businesses with a civil penalties of $500,000 for each victim. There would also be criminal penalties, a misdemeanor with jail time up to 6 months, and a fine of $750 or both. Republican State Representative Chuck Gray has been working on his vaccine passport ban legislation since the summer. The governor there, Mark Gordon, has an executive order, but it only prohibits government agencies from implementing a vaccine passport system. And as I've said from the very beginning, those are head fakes. You have to stop it. At the very beginning, the New England Journal of Medicine, because this is about politics, it's not about medicine. The New England Journal of Medicine said we got to mandate these vaccines, but we got to do it through corporate coercion. We don't want to have it done by the government, because then we will have due process challenges. So they've always worked about, it's always been about doing it through the corporations so they can pretend that they don't have anything to do with it. Now, well, we're not censoring you. The corporations are. We're not dictating and mandating vaccines. The corporations are doing it, so forth. And so it was always about that. So all this stuff to say, well, the government's not going to do it, that is just a head fake. They know that it was always about doing it through the corporations. So if your state is not stopping private companies from rolling out this vaccine plan for Pfizer, then your state is not doing anything to protect your liberty. Gray said, yeah, the governor's executive order needs to be strengthened and it needs to be a ban on vaccine passports placed in the state and in federal statute. He says this is a huge historic moment for our state. It's only the second time the legislature has called itself into a special session in Wyoming history. Two-thirds of each chamber would need to approve the rules for the session to be proposed by legislative leadership, said the AP. So as AP is talking about this, they love to point out that Asa Hutchinson said, I am a defender of employers' rights, so not of the employee. That's where these people are. That's why I said it's not just, you know, Hutchinson's a GOP conservative. He's not a libertarian. I defend corporate rights. I defend corporate rights, not individual rights. So, you know, if it's not a healthy place, they won't be able to have other workers there either, because other workers are going to say, this is not a healthy place because not everybody's going to be vaccinated. See? This is Asa Hutchinson selling not only the idea that corporate rights trump individual rights, but this is Asa Hutchinson saying that you are diseased if you're not vaccinated. That the vaccinated people are clean, the unvaccinated people are unclean. That the vaccinated people can't pass the disease or get the disease, but the unvaccinated people are the ones who are all dying. This lie. This lie. So, the again, $500,000 fine for firing, demoting, promoting, compensating, or refusing to hire employees based on their vaccination status. And in Kansas City, you have federal contractors at a Honeywell facility are joining ranks, and they're having to do it very quietly. They have to speak on condition of anonymity, and they did. They contacted LifeSite News, a couple of them. Speaking on condition of anonymity, one of the employees said, the goal of our demonstration here is to bring together the isolated and to be a voice for the voiceless and to stand united in action. If we are able to unite, we hope to be able to stand against these coercive measures. So beginning of October, their company, their Honeywell company, rolled out a timeline for employees to comply with the company's jab mandates, but it did not specify any process to apply for a religious or medical exemption. And that is not what is in the executive order for people who are government contractors, federal contractors. So there are two executive orders. There's an executive order for people who are federal employees. There's a second executive order for people who are federal contractors, and both of them discuss religious and medical exemptions. And then there's a third situation for private companies that are not federal contractors that have more than 100 employees, and that's not been written yet. That's just a press release. There's nothing. That's supposed to come through OSHA, but that's not been published yet. Not publicly, not in the Federal Register. So going back to this situation for the people who are federal contractors, said it is expected, security specialist said it is expected that once most of the employees cave in, the remaining who are unvaccinated will be terminated or they'll be placed on unpaid leave. See, that's the other thing. We're going to harass you till you leave. You know, if you put in your religious exemption, yeah, okay, we'll give it. And then we'll try to come back and trip you up with this list of 30 products that were supposedly created with fetal tissues. And then if that doesn't work, we'll harass you until you leave. And or maybe we'll just put you on unpaid leave and put you in limbo. We're not going to fire you so you don't get any unemployment benefits. And this is all being strategized out of the White House. Placing employees on unpaid leave for failure to get the jab is not unheard of. United Airlines attempted to do just that before a federal judge temporarily blocked the airline from carrying out its threat last week. Southwest Airlines is going to do that as well. And then they said, all right, we're not going to do that. We will keep people on and we'll pay them, even if we don't have them work. We'll keep them on until we evaluate their religious exemption status. So they've already moved back somewhat on that. So this is just a prevarication to get around firing people and to pay them unemployment. KC, Kansas City Freedom Group, is an informal email group that was started by a scientist there at the Honeywell federal contractor. It's already amassed more than 300 members, according to its founder, but he also does not want his name used. He's afraid of retaliation. This is America. This is America where people cannot speak out about draconian tyranny because of the things that will be done against you. And of course, they've been preparing us with this for quite some time with all these prohibitions about what you say about their woke gods. You know, we have certain taboos. You don't talk about those. You know, somebody wants you to use these pronouns. You better use those pronouns. Somebody imagines that they're a woman and they're a man. You better bow to that. All of that was preparatory for a lot of different things. One of them is to make sure that we don't speak out when we have these atrocious rules forced upon us. We're seeking to reach out to all the plant to break through the isolation. Again, they keep talking about this. It is. It's about isolation, and it's about creating fear. John Piper got it wrong. The people who are trying to create fear and isolation are the people who are imposing this stuff, the people who put the lockdown there. Those of us who are pushing back against it are fighting the isolation. So they said they're trying to break through the isolation fear that they're forcing on us so that those who are not able to get the vaccine are not forced to violate their conscience or risk their life in order to keep their job. That's just so reprehensible. I don't even understand how any pastor can support that. I just don't understand it. So totally devoid of discernment, of compassion, of understanding any of what is happening with this. It's not just understanding the details of how these transhumanists, how these organs are harvested in this cannibalistic thing. I talked about that abortion where the animation talks about how they're dismembering the baby in the mother. But they don't do it that way to harvest the organs. They have a different way. And in more than half of the cases, the child is born alive. And they remove the organs while the child is born alive because they want them fresh, not frozen. These people are diabolical. They're satanic. And you got pastors who refuse to stand against it. That's a sad state of this country, isn't it? The primary goal of the group is to be able to keep our jobs while not being subjected to involuntary forced shots without having to give an arm and a leg to get an exemption or having to give in to unrealistic and harassing supplemental requirements. That's it. Meanwhile, talking about harassing supplemental requirements, that's going to apply to the vaccinated as well, according to Rachel. Is her name Rachel? It's not. I'm thinking of Divine. It's Walensky. Let's just put her there. Rochelle, the other R. Rochelle Walensky, the CDC boss, is saying that schools should keep the mask mandates even after the kids are vaccinated. You look at these people like Walensky, you look at Leanna Wen, who is the former CEO of Planned Parenthood, one of the most annoying and strident and hateful voices out there against people who have not taken the Pfizer jab. These people are intent on destroying our children. If they can't destroy them and rip them apart inside the mother, they will rip them apart mind and body now. And that's what this is about. These vaccinations and these mask mandates on these kids, it's unbelievable. Yeah, even after you get the vaccine for your five-year-old, they will still put masks on them, according to CDC Walensky. You see how the slavery works? You see the lie involved in all of this? As Reason puts it, the CDC wants your vaccinated five-year-old to be masked indefinitely. Well, they got this one right, at Reason. They said, they quote the CDC, Walensky said, "We are going to continue to recommend masks in all schools for all people in those schools, and we will look forward to scaling out pediatric vaccination during this period of time." And so Reason Magazine says that was just a part of what she had to say. Reason Magazine sums it up and says, "So the quote-unquote benefits of vaccinating kids is that kids will be vaccinated. Otherwise, nothing changes." And that's kind of along the lines of what I played for you yesterday with the Zoom recording of that public health official in Canada saying, well, you know, we know that these people are not at risk. We're putting pressure on them just to incentivize them to get the vaccine. It doesn't have anything. As a matter of fact, they're less risk than the staff is because they don't have that much contact with people, and the staff can transmit the disease as well as these people. But we're just putting pressure on them to get them to get the vaccine. All of this is about getting the vaccine. This is not about science. It's not about public health. It's not about individual health. This is about getting everybody vaccinated. And so one person at University of California, San Francisco, who is an infectious disease specialist, Monica Gandhi, said to the CDC, "Can you please find a parameter to unmask children?" In other words, let's not leave them there indefinitely. Tell us what they have to do to get the masks off to please you. Please give us that information. Well, they're not going to do it. So we had a Johns Hopkins epidemiologist, Jennifer Nuzzo, said, quote, masks in schools were meant to be a temporary measure. It is good policy and practice to establish off-ramps for interventions that are not meant to be permanent. So we should be able to answer, what conditions will enable an end to the masking of children? Well, there are no conditions. You see, freedom is never given. It is only taken. They'll take your freedom away from you, and they're not going to give it back. You have to take it back. You have to stop asking these people, when will you take these requirements off of me? That is a sign of weakness. You say, you're not going to do this to my kids. End of story. So the writer of this says, my six-year-old, this is a person writing for Reason Magazine, my six-year-old has spent nearly one quarter of her life wearing masks in group indoor settings and attends a school where all the adults are vaccinated. Kids and adults alike get tested once a week and per state requirement as directly influenced by the CDC. Everyone over the age of two wears a mask, even outdoors. I got to say to this person, why? Why are you subjecting your six-year-old to this kind of oppression, psychological manipulation, this kind of physiological stress of wearing a filthy diaper over the six-year-old's face? But it's really the psychological issues. This is really becoming a very disturbing security blanket for these kids at this early age, wearing this all the time. They're not going to feel comfortable not wearing the mask. Who knows? Maybe they'll all become Islamic converts or something, right? A Harvard associate public health professor wrote in the Washington Post, it's easy to see how schools could sleepwalk into indefinite masking of kids for the entire school year and beyond. So there is no way that you can justify this based on what is happening, and there is no way that you can appease yourself out of this. You can take their jabs. You can take two of their jabs, three of their jabs, four of their jabs, but they're still going to have your kids being masked up in addition to however many jabs they have them take. So finally, in this article in Reason, they say, since the relevant public officials will not answer the question, I'll put it to the mask-happy blue state parents. At what number of cases, what number of hospitalizations, what number of vaccines, you name it, will you support allowing developmentally sensitive kids to take the masks off? Well, again, that's a rhetorical question, because as long as you ask, they will not do it. How many boosters will we need? Well, Israel says it's too soon to know. So what does it mean to be vaccinated? It's too soon to know. You're never going to get the mask off. You'll never be fully vaccinated. There'll always be another vaccine coming down the line. And it's really all about their profits. And as the White House is trying to finalize vaccine mandates, or we should say the firing mandate, you got dozens of groups that are now seeking a last-minute meeting. Now, it's kind of interesting because these lobbyists coming from industry associations, giant corporations, the National Chamber of Commerce, unions, they're looking to have meetings with the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, because they said, well, you know, we want to have some input into this rule that'll apply to some 80 million workers. And there's not really any concept of the Bill of Rights or of individual liberty, but they're looking at this from pragmatic standpoints, and they've got some real issues with it. You have the National Lumber and Building Material Dealers Association. You have the Corn Refiners Association. You have the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the National Retail Federation. Companies like Walt Disney and auto conglomerates like Stellantis, the AFL-CIO, and Koch-backed Americans for Prosperity and the Ethics and Public Policy Center. So when you look at this, these people are not out there because they are trying to support this for us. They're just working with the government to say, let's figure out how we can put out these mandates in a way it's going to work. And let's not do it in a way that's going to shut our businesses down. The way the Associated Press puts it out, they say this is initiated by these meetings seem to be initiated by small but vocal anti-vaccine factions such as right-wing message boards. See, that's the way Piper is reading right off of the mainstream media script. Representatives from multiple industry groups said in interviews that they'd expressed concerns to federal officials about the potential for coming vaccine requirements to exacerbate economic woes caused by supply chain issues and labor shortages. No, that's what this is about at this point. You know, everybody must be vaccinated. But at this point, what they're trying to do is they're trying to mandate firings, they're trying to mandate shortages, and they're trying to mandate a depression, a greater depression. So, Vice President of the National Retail Federation, no friend of the worker, says, my guys are concerned about the interaction between this standard and state and local laws. And this is why I talk about this. Look at what they're afraid of. They're afraid of your religious exemption, and they're afraid of local laws, state and local laws. But we have more capability to influence local laws. Do you realize that? Just like we're talking about the doctrine of the lesser magistrate. If you can't get, you know, you've got Cawthorn and Lee introducing in Washington a bill to stop these vaccine passports that would limit our travel, I don't think that's going to pass. It may not even come up for a vote because of Nancy Pelosi, but it's good to get them on the record that they don't want to allow you to travel freely. At the very least, that should be done by the Republicans, to get these Democrats on the record that they oppose you being able to travel from state to state. But it's not going to happen at the federal level. And in most of the states, it's not happening there either. But notice that the National Retail Federation is afraid of local laws. And they should be afraid of local laws, because that's where we can make this happen. Local laws is where we can make this happen. And again, the sheriffs, the mayors, the city council, the town council, that is where you're going to be able to have some effect still. They said maybe the OSHA standard will supersede those state and local laws, but we really need clear guidance on that. They're conspiring on how they can do these criminal acts. So you have the National Retail Federation conspiring with the Obama, not the Obama, the Biden administration. These conflicts with state laws are going to be really complicated. You bet they will be. We're going to tie you up in legal processes. But listen to this, because this is even better. They said some online conservative message boards and vaccine opponents have strategized about slowing down the process by requesting meetings with OMB. Now, listen to this. You know, we talk about sending a letter to your state representatives or your congressional representatives. I've talked many times about how, you know, they, you don't have to make a convincing argument. They weigh the responses to something by the pound. You know, how many of these things do we get in? But listen to this tactic to jam this up. If anyone wants to jam up the OSHA vaccine mandate rule, you can go to this page and request a meeting with OMB, read one point post on a gun rights site. Now, I don't have the link in this article to that. I'll see if I can find that, and I'll see if I can find where you go to request a meeting with OMB. But think about this. I mean, we've got 80 to 100 million people, right? 80 to 100 million people who are affected by this. A lot of them have kind of caved at this point, but a lot haven't. And so we've got many tens of millions of people who have not caved on this. And they point out on this gun rights site, quote, if a few hundred thousand people request meetings, this rule will be tied up with OMB for years. Now, I don't know how that works. I don't know if they have to give a meeting to everybody that requests it. But that certainly would be some great way to gum this whole thing up, wouldn't it? To request a meeting with OMB on these rules. That's why that's more important than the fact that you have the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and National Retail Federation requesting these meetings. If you request the meetings, you can gum up this process. All right, let's talk a little bit about Pfizer. And this is very, very important. I'm going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned, over and over again?
Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Whether you're feeling like the blues or bluegrass, APS Radio has you covered. Check out a wide variety of channels on our app at APSradio.com.
Good Morning America is brought to you by Pfizer.
CBS Health Watch sponsored by Pfizer.
Anderson Cooper 360. Brought to you by Pfizer.
ABC News Nightline. Brought to you by Pfizer.
Show me the money! Jared, you better yell! Show me the money!
All right, we're going to show you the money. We're going to show you the greed of Pfizer. As a matter of fact, I reported it was 6 months ago. Was it? No, actually, 8 months ago. The year's going pretty quickly. Back in February, I talked about the fact that an investigation by the UK-based Bureau of Investigative Journalism had turned up bullying by Pfizer of several Latin American governments. Now, this was reported not just by the UK-based Bureau of Investigative Journalism, but it was reported by Stat News. Stat News is a pharmaceutical publication. They are big cheerleaders of the vaccine. One of the things that they reported about this that bothered them a great deal was the fact that Pfizer was playing hardball and holding out for top dollar and punishing people if they donated vaccines to poor countries. These are people who believed that the vaccine was their lifeline. And they were very upset with Pfizer for being so totally mercenary about this. And so that was in February. And in February, again, accused of bullying Latin American governments, there was it was Argentina and Brazil, who talked about the unbelievable requirements that are being put in there for protection and for compensation by Pfizer, protection against wrongdoing, protection against fraud. Why were they so intent on having such radical protection against fraud? Did they know that they were engaging in fraudulent behavior, dangerous behavior? I think so. And again, I was talking about that in February. And now we have some documents. The reason this is coming to light again is that that was pretty much ignored, even though it was done by a reputable investigative organization, even though it was reported by trade publications that look at the vaccine and pharmaceutical industry and that have no issues with the vaccine whatsoever. They had an issue with the greed of Pfizer, but still wasn't reported by the mainstream media. For whatever reason, I think I just played for you why it's not reported by the mainstream media, right? Brought to you by Pfizer, and they don't have to do any of the disclaimers that are on Ask Your Doctor if they do it that way, do they? But in the case of one Latin American country, demands made by the pharmaceutical giant led to a three-month delay in the vaccine deal being reached. See, this is what Stat News was concerned about. Wait a minute. You know, you're delaying this to people? You're keeping this from going to poor countries because of your greed? They were outraged about that. But I was outraged, and I thought it was very suspicious how focused they were on protecting themselves from fraud, from negligence, and from malice. Malice. Because, you know, when Fauci gave legal protection on these vaccines for childhood vaccines back in 1986, that particular act, that did not rule out deliberate malice, deliberate fraud. And quite frankly, that's what I believe Pfizer is engaged in. And that's why they were so keen to have this covered up. And so because of that, Argentina, Brazil were not happy with that. And they did not come to an agreement, and they did not get the Pfizer vax at that time. They said the company's negotiators demanded more than the usual indemnity against civil claims filed by citizens who suffer serious adverse effects. They said Pfizer also insisted that the government cover the potential cost of civil cases brought as a result of Pfizer's own acts of negligence, fraud, or malice. In Argentina and Brazil, Pfizer asked for sovereign assets to be put up as collateral for future legal costs. And this was another thing that was so bizarre, it sounded like some kind of paranoid conspiracy theory that they would say, you're going to put up foreign sovereign assets as collateral. And they wanted, as collateral, they wanted foreign embassies, they wanted military bases that they had, any kind of public property they had, they wanted that put up as collateral. And they wanted it in foreign countries as well, so they could get out. That's not suspicious at all, is it, when they come in asking for that? So, again, this is all of this so far is going back to what we knew in February, what I reported in February. Pfizer asked for additional indemnity from civil cases, meaning that the company would not be held liable for rare adverse effects or for its own acts of negligence, fraud, or malice. If Pfizer sent the wrong vaccine, or if it made errors during manufacturing process, you know, we had subsequent to this, it's a couple of months ago, Japan pulled off first 1.6 million doses, then they pulled off an additional 1 million doses, 2.6 million doses. Why? Because they had black substances floating in their vaccines, and those substances interacted with magnets. So what's up with that? Was that a manufacturing issue? Do they get their money back? Probably not. See, these agreements that Pfizer has gone into these countries remain secret and sealed. And so we had one organization, one country in Latin America that went to this UK investigative journalism group, and they talked on condition of anonymity because they had reached an agreement with Pfizer, but Argentina and Brazil had not. And so we subsequently had some other things that came out showing the same type of thing being reported. And now we see the unredacted documents have now been released. As a comment, again, going back, this is still going back to February, some liability protection is warranted, but certainly not for fraud, not for gross negligence, not for mismanagement or failure to follow good manufacturing practices. They said Argentina could compensate for the vaccine's adverse effects, but not if Pfizer makes a mistake, said the official. So we're not going to do that. I mean, we'll compensate. We'll take the responsibility and we'll indemnify you against adverse effects. Well, that was nice because here in the U.S., not only do they not have the corporations who are making obscene profits have to compensate people for the injuries that they cause, but they don't even do it through their own vaccine courts. Yeah, most people don't get anything. And we've had $4 billion put out in damages over the last 30 years. But don't count on it happening with this, because now they're saying this is a different set of rules. This is now a vaccine that was rushed because of a pandemic, and we're not going to give you anything. Said, for example, what would happen if Pfizer unintentionally interrupted the vaccine's cold chain of minus 70 degrees Celsius during transport and storage, and a citizen wanted to sue them? It would not be fair for Argentina to pay for a Pfizer error. And I remember talking about this, and I said, you know, this has been a question that I've had all along. Nobody in the mainstream media will even ask the question of Pfizer. Why? Because you know, their programs are sponsored by Pfizer. They won't answer my questions. But I always have said, you know, well, you got these absurd refrigeration requirements. What happens if this is not properly refrigerated? Does it just become inert and it doesn't work? Or does it become dangerous? And according to this, these people seem to understand that it becomes dangerous. And you might want to sue them for negligence. We offered to pay millions in doses in advance, and we accepted this international insurance. But the last request was unusual. Pfizer demanded sovereign assets of Argentina be a part of the legal support. It was an extreme demand. I'd only heard of that once when foreign debt had to be negotiated, but both in that case and in this one, we rejected it immediately. So they wanted to waive all, they wanted to waive sovereignty of its assets abroad in favor of Pfizer. In other words, yeah, we've got some assets in other countries, and so we'll turn them over to you in case you know, you need them for something, right? That'll be held up as collateral. They wanted to not be able to apply domestic laws to Pfizer. They wanted to be above the law. No penalty for Pfizer for vaccine delivery delays. Exempt Pfizer from all civil liability for side effects. And now that brings us back to what was released yesterday. Yesterday, we've now had unredacted copies of Pfizer's purchasing agreement. See, this was 8 months ago, and we had some information about it. Turns out that it's much broader. This is being done in a lot of different places. And you've got a lot of different countries now blowing the whistle on Pfizer. People are starting to uncover the lies about this entire deception. Let me tell you, they've got something to worry about. You're starting to get an uprising of people who realize how bad this vaccination thing is. They're rising up against these mandated vaccines and the mandated firings. And they're starting to rise up. Now these countries have had it with Pfizer and being manipulated by them. So unredacted copies of Pfizer's purchasing agreements with a range of countries showing the pharmaceutical giant is bullying their governments, and especially the governments of developing countries, making them waive sovereign immunity, preventing them from penalizing Pfizer over late shipments, allowing the company to restrict vaccine donations. And now this has been obtained by another organization, Public Citizen. They said the bombshell report published by Public Citizen on Tuesday, alleges that the New York City-based company worked to silence governments, restrict nations' access to vaccine donations, and forced governments to pay out lawsuits they may face for breaking intellectual property laws and to be able to seize public assets in other countries as well. If payments are missed and they want to have foreign bank accounts in other countries. Countries that are included in this are Albania, Brazil, Colombia, Chile, the Dominican Republic, Peru. They were all subject to these terms in order to acquire the vaccine. Public Citizen reports that high-income countries, such as the U.S., have assisted Pfizer in these bullying tactics, staunchly protecting their intellectual property and allowing the company to form a monopoly. Oh, yeah, about that. Nine unredacted copies of Pfizer's purchasing agreements with eight different countries and with the European Union. We've got the European Union agreement now. One provision in the contract with Brazil made the South American country waive sovereign immunity, which protects the nation from lawsuits in order to access the vaccine. It also prevented Pfizer from being penalized for late shipments. Countries, including the U.S., are not allowed to make any public announcements regarding the details of the contract. You see how they've got the United States controlled? These people control us. Pfizer controls us. And so this is now being reported by MSN and mainstream media. Now, finally, 8 months after we knew this, the Manhattan-based pharmaceutical giant has maintained tight levels of secrecy about negotiations and governments over contracts that determine the fate of populations. And these are people, again, who believe that the vaccine is the health imperative. And they're outraged about the purely mercenary aspect of these companies. As I pointed out yesterday, one financial institution estimated that Pfizer and Moderna would make $93 billion next year just off the vaccines. That was double what they had estimated before. And I think that's still conservative. One other organization put the number up in the $120 billion range. Experts who reviewed the terms of contract suggested demands were extreme. They said it's almost as if the company would ask the United States to put the Grand Canyon up as collateral, said Lawrence Gostin, a professor of public health at Georgetown University. That's exactly what they're doing. Except they want the assets, these sovereign assets, things like the embassy in other countries, so that you'll be able to actually take possession of it, because you're not going to go in and... If they wanted to get something from Brazil, they're not going to go into Brazil and take the Brazilian assets out of Brazil. But if Brazil's got some assets in another country, they would then do it. Pharmaceutical companies have concerns that that they could be held liable for any injury that the vaccine seems to have caused. Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I thought these things were 100% safe. I thought they were 100% effective. Why do they need this kind of protection, right? Do they not believe in their product? Well, I don't think they do believe in their product if they're trying to get protection against fraud. Fraud. Because this whole thing has been fraudulent. They're demanding these kinds of sovereign assets because they're engaged in fraud. Hiding contracts from public view, publishing documents filled with redacted text, means that we don't know how or when the vaccines will arrive, what happens if things go wrong, the level of financial risk that buyers are absorbing, said a research manager at Transparency International Health Program. Much of what is known about Pfizer's contracts has come out in leaks, often through journalism, from local outlets or from international ones, including the Bureau of Investigative Journalism. The people reported all this stuff 8 months ago. They said Pfizer alone is expected now to sell $54.5 billion worth of coronavirus vaccine next year, twice the value of Moderna's sales, and it's gone up even faster than people had expected. Now, with all this happening, and just to show the level of how Pfizer owns us and owns our government, and the government as well as the media have turned into Pfizer salesmen, I was sent this from a listener, Round Rock Independent School District. They sent out, the mother said, today I got a survey from my daughter's school that has completely floored me, but not unexpected. The Round Rock Independent School District sent out this email today, and they sent me a survey created by Austin Public Health, requesting me to answer five talking points on whether or not I agree or disagree with the statements. And here's what this looks like. I apologize if it's very small, but sent me a picture of this, and I'll kind of read it to you. And this says, parent caregiver survey on COVID-19 vaccine for children. And the first question is, how many kids in this age do you have in your household, between 5 and 11? Because this is a marketing survey being done on behalf of Pfizer by the independent school district in Round Rock, because they become nothing other than marketing branches for Pfizer at every level of government, from the federal government down to your independent school district. Next question. Do you plan to vaccinate your child or children aged 5 to 11 with a vaccine, if it's approved? Next question. Do you plan to vaccinate your child with a COVID vaccine? I'm sorry, I just read that. That's number two. It's split on two different ones. Third question. Please read the following statements and check the box that best fits how you agree with the statement. And the boxes are going to be, you know, strongly agree, do not agree, or disagree, and strongly disagree. And so the questions are, the COVID-19 vaccine is safe for children age 5 to 11. The COVID vaccine is effective for children age 5 to 11. The COVID vaccine can protect children age 5 to 11 from getting, this is very small, sorry, from getting severe illness. And I think children aged 5 to 15 years old should get the COVID vaccine when it is approved. So they wanted to know whether you agree, strongly disagree, and that type of thing with that. The listener said, second page of the survey asked me for the school she attends, my zip code, and how I racially identify. Yeah, because, you know, you could be white, you could identify as black, I guess. No problem with that. This is extremely disturbing to me, and I view these questions as inappropriate. Oh, yes, they are inappropriate. Very much so. Babylon Bee has the appropriate take on it. Experts warn that if children between the ages of 5 to 11 are not vaccinated, then Pfizer executives won't get their sales bonuses, because that's what this is about. This is about a rapacious greed of these people and their absolute total control of government, from the federal government down to the local government. But in the Babylon Bee, it says this would be absolutely catastrophic for struggling Pfizer execs. We will not meet our sales goal if you do not agree to vaccinate your 5 to 11-year-old, because, you know, they have no risk from the virus. So this is simply about getting everybody vaccinated. It's about making money for them. Not vaccinating your kindergartner could jeopardize their ability to make their Porsche payments or to pay off their mistress or to remain platinum members at their golf clubs, and we just can't let that happen. And so the White House is detailing plans to quickly vaccinate 28 million children, ages 5 to 11. This is according to the Associated Press. They say federal regulations will Federal regulators will meet over the next 2 weeks to weigh the benefits of giving shots to kids after lengthy studies meant to ensure the safety of the vaccines, because this is associated propaganda associated with pharmaceutical companies. This is AP saying this. You want to say that these are lengthy studies? They're not lengthy studies. If this was even a normal length of a study, they would still be in phase one or phase two. So these are not lengthy studies. Each one of these phases would last from 1 to 3 years. That's why Fauci said it would take a decade. We have just passed the one-year anniversary of them finishing this stuff. These are not lengthy studies. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back with Brandon Smith. Stay with us. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
All right, and joining us now is Brandon Smith. He's a 15-year veteran of the Liberty Movement. He is a founder of the Alternative Market Project. His website is alt-market.us. He's focused on the analysis of mainstream disinformation, economic instability, as well as practical solutions and preparedness in the face of large-scale crisis events. He promotes organized resistance, volunteerism, and decentralization in order to combat the global erosion of our freedoms. And so joining us now is Brandon Smith. How you doing, Brandon?
Hi, David. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. And I guess we should say, let's go with Brandon. But I'm sure you're tired of that by now. But it could be worse. My wife's name is Karen, so she's had to endure a much worse stigma than let's go, Brandon. But I want to tell you, you got an article at your site at altmarket.us about what is happening with Chinese ports. And I've talked about what's happening with the California ports. And this is a big part of the breaking of our supply chain. It has massive implications for everybody. You know, we got a lot of people who are facing mandated firings by Biden, but this breaking down of our supply chain is going to affect everyone. And of course, the massive firings are also going to be a part of further destruction of our supply chain. But when we look at the port situation, what is going on with the Chinese ports? Let's talk about that and just try to figure out what is happening here in the U.S. ports as well. But what's going on the Chinese ports?
Well, I think predominantly it has to do with the strict COVID mandates over in China and you know, around the world, but primarily in China. You know, their policies are very similar to Australia in terms of you know, they find a few infections or a handful, and they immediately lock down an entire city or an entire province. So the issue with China is the, I guess, the horror story that they've fed the public in terms of COVID-19 and the notion that if there's even an ounce of COVID within a province that it's like rice in or poison in the water supply.
Yeah.
And their overreaction to everything, this facade that they have to put on, is what's really causing these shortages of labor at their ports, and that's somewhat similar to what we're seeing in California. But there's a lot of factors going on in California, but that's a main one, is this sort of overreaction to COVID, which is causing a major labor shortages.
And they refer to that as zero COVID. You know, we can't have any COVID anywhere. And we've had Fauci drop that idea at the beginning of this, but fortunately it hasn't been adopted here yet. But, you know, we see these supply chain disruptions, and I'm somebody who is skeptical that it is simply an unavoidable consequence of all this, because of what I've seen from the truckers who took video. They were outraged that they've been sitting there, some of them, for days waiting for product to be loaded for them. And one guy took a video, and he starts out with the video, and you can hear all the different engines that are running, the diesel engines that are running and idling and waiting for something to be given to them. And he says, you can see all these cranes up here. They're very visible. They're very big. And he said they have not moved all day. And so these longshoremen who are running the cranes are not doing anything. And they're in a situation where they have they're very highly compensated, and they have everybody by the neck. Even their managers at the ports are afraid to criticize them, because they can get fired if they criticize these guys. So I look at this and I wonder if these few crane operators who are so well connected that they can negotiate such powerful terms, I wonder if there isn't something else happening there in California with the government trying to keep this as a bottleneck. What do you think?
I mean, it's possible. I'm not familiar with how much top-down control there is in terms of the unions and the workers and how much they do, in a specific work day. But, I think there could certainly be some deliberate idling of labor,
yeah,
in the ports, maybe to deliberately create shortages. But I think that it's probably a combination of a dozen different things, including the fact that the mandates, the strict mandates in California, have definitely reduced the amount of labor and the amount of workload. And I guarantee, if we were to remove somehow all of these mandates, if Newsom was suddenly to go and the mandates were removed in California overnight, I bet you that the supply chain would fix itself almost overnight as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The government only has to really throw one little wrench in a very complicated machine, and they can break the whole thing. So we don't really know, and I think they've thrown multiple wrenches in multiple places. And then the rest of it, even though it would normally work, is now broken, because it's a very complicated machinery with a lot of different links, and most of those links are involving transportation. But let's talk a little bit about an article that you have. In a civil war, the authoritarian left would be easily beaten, but it won't end there. So, and you've got a graphic of a paper tiger there. What is your take as they're pushing us towards this? It does look like they're trying to push us into a civil war. They're trying to split people up by racial status. They're trying to split people up by vaccination status. And we have this this polarized society where people on each side are getting angry and angry. I mean, it does look like they're trying to push us to a civil war. So what happens next?
Well, I think what the globalists want is definitely not necessarily a civil war, but more like a small, manageable insurgency of conservatives, a handful of conservatives that go out and maybe commit some violent acts, something that could be construed easily as terrorism. And then they can come in with their, alphabet agencies and possibly portions of the military, deal with us swiftly, and then move on to their agenda of the Great Reset and the New World Order, with us as the terrible villains, as a sort of a prop that they can use to motivate the public to go along with whatever they want. And I don't think it's going to play out that way. I think that's what they hope for. But clearly there's, I think, far more resistance in the U.S., at least, to the COVID mandates than maybe they expected. You're seeing 20 states at least with anti-mandate, rules and, I guess restrictions in terms of what the governor's executive orders say. So we can't really call them laws, but
yeah.
at least there's some restrictions in terms of you're not allowed to institute discrimination based on COVID vaccination status. So that's one thing we have going in at least 20 states in the U.S. is this sort of block or wall against these mandates. So I don't think they expected that. I think they were also hoping maybe for a much higher death rate in terms of COVID, which would scare the population into going along with the reset and all of the mandates and rules. And that didn't really happen either. You know, you look back at Event 201, which was a couple of months before the COVID pandemic, quote-unquote pandemic started.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, during Event 201, they were calling for around 65 million deaths in the first year of any coronavirus pandemic. Obviously, that didn't happen. So I think if that had happened, maybe they would have had much more agreeable public in the U.S., and maybe they would have got what they wanted, but it didn't happen. It didn't work out that way. And people just aren't seeing the use of all of these mandates and restrictions and lockdowns. They don't see the purpose behind having all of these rules for a virus that has a median death rate of 0.26%.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't seem practical.
Yeah, we're starting to have some things that I was just talking about before you came on. We're starting to see some exposure of what was going on behind the scenes. Redacted documents, some governments that were dealing with Pfizer are now talking about how the government, how Pfizer was demanding from the government that they had sovereign assets in other countries, that they be held harmless against fraud and malicious acts. And so when you start to look at this kind of stuff, just as we're seeing the NIH finally admitting that Fauci, yes, he was funding gain-of-function research, some of the stuff is starting to open up. And I think you're right. The thing that we've got to be careful about is that we don't take the bait. You know, they do want to have some, you know, small number of individuals who are going to get fed up with this and are going to, you know, physically get violent with them and start a insurrection so they can have an excuse to crack down on everybody. I think that, from our side, is probably the biggest risk keeping us that we have to look at in order to not win this. I think the way we win this is by standing together and standing up to this and refusing to comply with this. I mean, but we got to be careful that we don't get involved in some kind of an outbreak of rage. Do you agree? Violent rage.
Yeah, we definitely don't want like a Fort Sumter situation where we do something stupid that could easily be painted, the optics of it could be easily painted in the media as a terrorist act or a terrorist situation. I think that would be very dumb on our part.
Yeah.
However, they have a lot of options in terms of how the optics are painted in the media. So, there's always the option of a false flag that could be used to,
yep,
used against us and blamed on us for, building up the image that we're all what they claim us to be. We're domestic terrorists. We're all white supremacists, domestic terrorists, anything, whatever evil label you can come up with, that's what they're going to come at us with eventually anyway. But we don't want to help them along by doing anything stupid. The other issue is, I think what will happen over time, and eventually they are going to come after people simply for refusing to comply. This is going to happen. We've seen it in other countries. We're seeing it in Australia right now. People who just speak out are being charged, being fined, or being arrested. So then you have, I think, what I would call a Lexington Bridge moment, where you're sort of forced to stand up to the oppression at that point. So you don't want a Fort Sumter moment. If you are going to end up fighting, you want something more like a Lexington Bridge moment, where you are on the defensive person, you're the good guy, they're the oppressor, they're trying to take something from you, or they're trying to wrongly imprison people in your leadership.
I agree. Yeah, it has to be clearly seen as a defensive move. Which is what you're saying. And, of course, the most evil label that they can put against us is not domestic terrorists, but unvaccinated, perhaps, because that is what they're building up. There, you've got an article, COVID authoritarians are the cause of America's problems, not the unvaccinated. But they're trying to project all of this onto the unvaccinated. You're not to be afraid of the virus anymore, because the virus is conquerable with a vaccine. So what you should be afraid of are the unvaccinated, because they are the vermin amongst us. And that is the thing that I think is the most dangerous, and that's where I think we're going to continue to see, if we don't stop this, if we're unable to stop this by uniting and standing up to this and bringing things to a screeching halt by people who refuse to go along with this, that are purged, and they start to see this. We've already seen some pullback from Southwest Airlines, and I think other companies are going to have to do this if enough people stand up to them. But if that doesn't happen, how do you see this rolling out, Brandon? Do you see them, what kind of progression do you think they're going to take against the unvaccinated?
Well, I think it's sort of an interesting dynamic. Again, I think it's something that they didn't necessarily expect, but they're trying to adapt to the level of resistance, at least in the United States, to the vaccine mandates. And what they're doing, at least so far, what it looks like they're doing, is adjusting to where we refuse to comply. We either force them to fire us, or we, you know, leave our jobs en masse. We leave a lot of these industries with, you know, a 20% workforce hole, or a 30%, 40 to 50% workforce hole in some cases, as we've seen with like police departments across the country. And this is going to be devastating to these different industries and institutions. There's no way they're going to be able to function with a 10% loss of employees, let alone, you know, a 30 to 50% loss. They're just not going to be able to function.
That's
right. What I'm seeing right now is a narrative that they're trying to cobble together, in which the unvaccinated people who left these industries because they were forced to, they're the villains. They're the bad guys, because
yes,
now they've put the country at this huge disadvantage, and they've made the economy unstable. That's the narrative that Biden and a lot of these different media outlets are sort of trying to inject into the public consciousness, that we are the villains because we refused to get vaccinated, and that forced them to fire us from these jobs, or it caused us to leave these jobs voluntarily, and now the system is breaking because of us, because we wouldn't just comply. That's the narrative that I've seen.
Yeah, I agree. They've already blamed, subsequent surges that seem to be tied to vaccination rates. They blame the subsequent surges, according to their statistics, on the unvaccinated. You know, we're the problem for the disease. And as you correctly pointed out, I think as we have these supply problems, regardless of what happens with them, even if it is not because you've got 10 to 15% of the people who refuse to get the vaccine, and these institutions and companies start to have problems one way or the other. I mean, they've put so many problems into the system already, monkey wrenches. And once these things start breaking and things start breaking down, they will blame everything on the unvaccinated. We're going to be the new scapegoats out there. And I think where this is going to go, we see this this demonization, and the picture that you used on your article shows a person with the yellow star on their back, says non-vaccine. I think we know where this is going to go, because besides just kicking us out of the companies and kicking us out of being able to go into public spaces, as we're seeing in Germany, people not even being allowed in supermarkets in one German state, in Hesse. After they kick us out of the public spaces because we are filthy and diseased, after a while, I think they're going to say, well, you're not clean enough to be walking around on your own either. So they're going to come up with some kind of a house arrest or some kind of mass incarceration. And I think that's probably the Lexington moment that you're talking about there.
Yeah, I would say that they're definitely going to try to do what they've done in Australia. They're going to try to do it piecemeal, at least in the United States. They're going to try to tiptoe that in, in different sectors of the economy. They'll say, mass events, big crowded areas, things like that. You're not allowed in those. And then they'll say, well, we can't let you work at certain jobs, which they're already doing in some cases in certain states. They're booting people out of certain jobs, especially in state workforce. They're booting those people out, so that's an issue. And then eventually it's going to be everything. You're not even allowed to go into the grocery store without a vaccine passport. But I think a lot of people in the U.S. are aware of this dynamic. They know it's coming. Mm-hmm. We've seen it in other countries. We've known probably from the very beginning of this thing that's probably where this was all going.
Yep.
So I think people are kind of ahead of the game in the United States. There's a lot more liberty-minded people and people who follow the alternative media in the United States. So we knew this was coming. That's why they're getting so much resistance. And that's why it's hugely important for conservatives, constitutionalists, just liberty-minded people in general, to organize their towns, organize their counties and states to combat this and set up our own alternative systems to whatever system they plan to use. So if they're using the big box stores, the big retailers, to enforce this kind of these kind of mandates, then we need to organize small businesses, which are on board with our way of thinking. We need to organize them so that people have somewhere to go. They have another option to go to shop and to get all the goods they need. Instead of going to Walmart or Costco or Target or whatever, they should be going and shopping to these liberty-minded small businesses.
I agree. And you got an article going back to about a month ago. Organizing patriots in the face of government informants and false flags. What would you suggest that people do? Because that really is the world in which we live now. We know that every time they find an organization that's rising, they will infiltrate it and try to turn it in a way that they can entrap people, whether it's false flags or just getting somebody to go along with what they lead you into. So what should people do in order to organize? Because you point out in your article, we can't do this alone. We do need to organize with other people. So what would you tell people to do, and what would you tell them not to do?
One thing I would say is stop waiting around for an elaborate national organization to do the job. Stop
yes.
waiting around for a top-down system, somebody to come in, a grand figure. Conservatives in general tend to have this huge weakness, is they're always waiting around for some, George Washington or some kind of messiah to come in and lead them to the promised land.
Yes.
And you need to stop waiting for that person, and you need to stop waiting for that giant national organization to do the job for you. The main thing is you need to do the work, and you need to do it locally. You need to do it in your neighborhood, in your town, in your county. You need to start having meetings for preparedness, maybe even just talking about some of the current events, things that are going on in the world, and you start getting people networked and connected in your area, people that live right in your area. You get those people networked and connected, and you start getting them talking to local business owners. You start getting them thinking about alternative markets and bartering and that sort of stuff, so that you can build an alternative system right where you live.
Yes.
And then you don't have to necessarily worry about the mandates, at least right where you are. because you have a system, you're setting up your own system, you're putting a system in place that everybody in your area can use to either work around the mandates or combat the mandates and stop them in your town or your county. That's how this changes, is each town, each county, each state, you know, at the state level even, starts to fight back against this, and you're not necessarily worried about what everyone else in the country is doing. You're worried about what you're doing right where you live.
I agree. Yeah, the left has always said, you know, think globally and act locally. We need to understand what the global agenda is, and we need to be able to defend against that locally. All politics is local, and it really does come down to coming together with other people, standing together so that, and right now we've got a great opportunity for that, don't we, Brandon? Because you've got people realize that we're seeing empty shelves, we're seeing people losing their jobs, and so there's a real legitimate impetus for people to come together and to cooperate mutually to create, you know, let's coordinate on how we're going to raise food, how we're going to specialize on that. Let's coordinate about how we can start bartering services with each other and all these other types of things. And that really is fundamentally about starting to create a new society from the bottom up and creating it in your neighborhood locally where you have the most ability to succeed, isn't it?
Yeah, and if things continue on this path, which I think that's exactly what the plan is, then the system's going to continue to break down. And it's not going to take very long. It seems like, especially with the supply chain issues, with stagflation, with the vaccine mandates, that there's some kind of deadline that these people are working towards. They're trying to move very quickly to put mm-hmm. their restrictions and controls in place. And I don't think we have much more than a year before things get really bad, either in terms of an economic breakdown or Biden tries to put boots on the ground in certain places to enforce the vaccine passports. I don't think we have much more than a year, so there's a lot of incentive here for people, especially going into Christmas. I think we're going to see a lot of empty shelves.
Yep.
There's a lot of incentive for people to start building something different, building an alternative. So now's the time to, you know, strike while the iron is hot. You need to get people organized right now.
I agree. And I think a large component of these mandated firings, especially in the military and the police, is to make sure that they have purged out people who are going to have any kind of sincerely held religious beliefs, who are going to be focused on the Constitution. And you've got an article, "We Will Not Comply. Red States Should Offer Sanctuary to Businesses as Well as to Military and Medical Personnel who are being kicked out because of these mandated firings from the Biden administration." This could be a real opportunity. And I've seen a couple of states where they have made specific appeals to people to come there if they're nurses and they're out of work, or, you know, other professions, to come to that particular area. You know, in Florida and Texas, they've made these types of statements, reaching out to people who have been forced out of their positions to come there. That could be a very useful realignment as well, right?
Yes, and it's funny because it's actually, I mean, maybe they intend to purge all of the conservatives and liberty-minded people out of these different institutions and different industries, but it's funny because, in a way, they may be sabotaging themselves in the long run, because all they're doing, I think, is, you know, maybe some of these people were just kind of on the fence about, you know, the idea of the Great Reset or the New World Order. Maybe they weren't very politically involved, but now they are.
Yeah, that's right.
Especially some of these military people. Now they're mad.
Yeah.
And now they're going to be on our side. So they're actually pushing a lot of these good people, you know, who are producers and smart people. They're pushing them over to our side. So, you know, I say, hey, go ahead, you know, go ahead and do that, make these people mad, because now they're going to be on our team and they're going to be working for us. So all of these doctors and nurses, these different medical professionals that they're pushing out of states like, you know, California or New York, hey, the red states should offer them jobs in their states. I think that governors in red states should offer them work. They could also build up their own alternative clinics in red states where they're protected from the federal government. That would be a huge advantage because yes. Now, I mean, like in Florida, they have shortages of nurses and doctors in Florida. Why not get all these liberty-minded nurses and doctors from New York down to Florida if they're willing to go? I think that's
right.
That's a win-win for everybody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. These are people now who are kind of like the refugees from an Eastern European communist country. They've seen the worst of it, and they will be good allies with us. And a lot of people, as you point out, are waking up to this, saying, you know, I thought this was a conspiracy theory. This seemed like it was paranoid, but look at how rapidly this is happening, and this stuff is really coming along quickly. So I think there's a lot of hope. You sound like you're pretty optimistic about some opportunities with this, but I do think there is a lot of hope. I think there's going to be a realignment. There's going to be a rebuilding of America, and it's going to be done with people who have now seen where this is headed and what it looks like. I'm pretty optimistic. What about you?
I think it's important for people in the liberty movement. A lot of us tend to be cynical and maybe even pessimistic at times, and to only see the doom in every situation. And I think it's important for a lot of us to understand that the globalists are just human too, and they are not infallible. Even if they've been very careful and meticulous in their planning, they make mistakes all the time. They also have their narcissists, a lot of them, and they have massive egos, mm-hmm. and that leads them to overestimate their chances of success and underestimate the rest of us because they think we're all stupid cattle.
That's absolutely true. So
they're definitely setting themselves up for failure because of that mentality. And I think there are numerous opportunities for us to take advantage here. And everything's really kind of culminating and coming to a head in terms of this fight. It's something that, you know, I've been tracking for 15 years now. There's other people out there that have been tracking it for decades. So, you know, we've been watching this develop. We kind of all knew where it was headed.
Yep.
But it's good to see so much resistance going for it. I thought maybe if we were lucky, we would have 10% of the country on our side when all of this came down and they really tried to implement the New World Order agenda. But it's looking like we have a lot more, at least in the United States, a lot more people than just 10%, and that's good thing.
Yeah, even their polls, and of course, you know, they're going to paint it in their direction, as they always do with these types of polls. They were saying, you know, 30% of the population doesn't really want to get the vaccines, and there's a hardcore of 15% that says absolutely never, no way, ever going to happen. So to have 15% of the people on our side, that is a big improvement. And again, I say that I'm optimistic about this, Brandon, because I've seen things like this last year with school. Look at how the educational institutions, which should have been discredited for such a long time based on what they're teaching kids, what they're doing to kids, and people were afraid to try an alternative of homeschooling. And then when they were forced into it, they said, you know, I think we can do this, and this has worked out. Many people have said this has worked out better for us than the other way, and I don't think we would have ever had as big a move into homeschooling. Now we're looking, and many jurisdictions and many demographics are looking at 10 to 15% of the people that see this as a much better alternative, and it is a much better alternative. So I think we're going to be pushed into this, but I think that there's a window of opportunity here. You know, there's a danger, but there's an opportunity. So it really is a crisis period of time here. But I'm still optimistic about this, and I'm glad to hear that you are as well. Thank you for joining us. And again, I want to tell people where they can find your excellent articles at alt-market.us. Thank you, Brandon. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Brandon Smith. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to the DavidKnightShow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Whether you're feeling like the blues or bluegrass, APS Radio has you covered. Check out a wide variety of channels on our app at APSradio.com.
All right, and I want to talk a little bit about the back and forth of the budget. And, of course, I think this is another optimistic sign that Biden and the super radical, because I don't think there's anybody in the Democrat Party that's not radical. I mean, you know, maybe Manchin, but I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily even say Manchin, but because we've got some really radical Republicans. I mean, the Republicans, as I've said many times, are like the Democrats of a few decades ago, and most of the Democrats are just radical Marxists. But they bit off a lot. It was a very ambitious program. They wanted $3.5 trillion. Many people said they thought it would be more like a $5 trillion program. Now they've just cut that in half, and it only took one or two senators, you know, Manchin, Sinema, to push back against that. And so I think that's a very important indicator of what people who are determined and who have a backbone can really accomplish. And we should never, and that's true of us at our local level as well. But there's also been a massive pushback against this $600 IRS bank surveillance aspect, this proposal that they had. And they walked that back. They said, all right, we'll move it up a little bit. And I thought at first they were going to take it up to 666, but they went a little bit higher on certain things. It's still not clear exactly where they're going to wind up, but they had 20 GOP attorneys general oppose the original proposal. They wrote a letter this last Friday to Biden and to the Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, saying this stands in direct opposition to the privacy that Americans are entitled to, because basically it was a transitional step. They would say, well, we're not going to have every transaction of every person reported, but we will start at the transactions from $600 up, which is pretty close to that. In the same way that they said, well, we're not going to mandate all private businesses do vaccines, just the ones that are 100 employees and up. So they establish these things as principles, and then they can adjust the rate. So they can adjust it down. If they will get the cooperation and the compliance of companies that have 100 employees, they will then move that down to 50, or they'll move it down to 10. We've seen this type of thing before. These arbitrary measures about, 6 feet apart, or we'll have 100 people that can be in a church at a time, or 10 people that can be in the church at a time, whatever. You know, we'll change that. They had gone at one point in time, they talked about in Canada, they said no more than 10% capacity in the church, and then they just took it down to 10 people. That's the way these people operate. So when they come out and they try to pass off a $10,000 IRS reporting threshold, they say, we're just going after the super wealthy. No, they're not. They're going after everybody. And whatever they set this threshold at, whether they set it at, again, they're aggressive. They think they can get away with anything. So they went all the way down to 600. And when people pushed back, they said, all right, we'll raise it up to 10,000. Because if they can establish that principle, that precedent of monitoring what everybody is doing, then they will gradually lower that down as time goes on. And, of course, just as the IRS, just as the income tax, rather, began as a teeny tiny tax, like a 1% tax on the 0.1%, then it became a wage tax, and it kept going further and further down until essentially most of their money is coming from the middle class. And that was what it was always designed to do. So we understand what this is about, but it is essentially when they start talking, whatever they set the threshold to, the point of all this is to have complete surveillance and control. And that's going to really come with a central bank digital currency. So regardless of what they say about that, they can mark this out as a criminal, tracking criminals or tracking rich people, but this is all about total surveillance and control. One school board protester pointed out that she knows exactly what this is like because she's come from China. As a New American has pointed out, we've had people who've spoken up who lived in Venezuela, a Venezuelan actress. We've heard from people from Cuba. And now there is an immigrant from communist China living in Virginia who is speaking up about what she is seeing being done there. And, of course, that was the whole impetus for Rod Dreher's Live Not by Lies book. He said he's known, had friends who... His parents escaped life under communism, and he said they started calling me saying, you know, my parents who lived under this, they're getting very, very concerned because they're seeing exactly what they escaped. They know exactly what this is. And he said, I had so many people contact me, that's why he did that book. And he used the title of Solzhenitsyn's last op-ed piece before he was ejected from the country. But this individual from China, her name is Xi Van Fleet. She said, when I was in China, I spent my entire school years in Chinese Cultural Revolution. So I'm very, very familiar with the communist tactics of how to divide people, how they canceled the Chinese traditional culture, and how they destroyed our heritage. And now all of this is happening here in America. Those are always the tactics. Divide and conquer people, break them into competing fighting groups, but especially you destroy their culture and especially their religion. All communist dictatorships will come after all religions. It doesn't matter. It's not just Christianity. They'll come after any religion. Why? Because they demand that their government have godlike powers and be worshipped as God. They want it to be omnipotent. They want it to be omnipresent everywhere. And they want it to be omniscient, to know everything about you. They see themselves, their model is to create a God-like government. That's why I call it Godverment. Van Fleet joined with other parents this summer. They're in Virginia, that one county where they've had a lot of talking about that and you know, the impetus for them saying, we're going to label you people as domestic terrorists. They were simply speaking up about what was happening in their schools. They called them racist for a long time, she said, but that did not work. So now they have to upgrade it to domestic terrorists. I do have a question, though. What is the next step, she told the outlet? Is it a Tiananmen Square crackdown? Is that next? Or will the parents who one day risk their lives just to speak out for the children? She said, that is why I'm here, and that is why I'm speaking up. She said, the question was manipulation and character assassination, calling people damning names, cultural destruction, the divide-and-conquer strategy, was all that employed as tactics prior to the Communist Manifesto's publication in 1848 and the earlier birth of socialism? What were they called back then? She said, evil. They were just called evil. And so the New American says, when we start calling people communists, maybe that's really not what we should call them. It's not a fundamental characterization, they said. It's not powerful. In our relativistic age, we instinctively shy away from absolutist terms such as evil. As a matter of fact, they've kind of inoculated themselves from being called communists, you know, because for the longest time, the media has painted as reactionary, paranoid, and delusional anyone who labels somebody as a communist because of the excesses of McCarthyism. And so they were able to turn that around. And even though these people were communists, even though they were communists pushing communism through media and through entertainment, they were able to push that around so that now people just kind of laugh off that label. And so I think that really is important. I think we need to just go with the direct label and just say it's evil. It truly is evil. What would you term? What terms would you choose, communist or evil, as they point out? So... we have the state in terms of here in America, where we are at this point in time. You have in Nebraska, Republican Nebraska, you have the State Department of Education has now excluded religious educators from a sex ed advisory panel. And I want you to see how this operated, because even in a very conservative, very Republican state, what this particular Department of Education in Nebraska shows is that the levers of power in these massive institutions that we've created at the state level, certainly at the federal level, the levers of power can be seized by an activist minority that is at odds with the vast majority of the people, especially in Nebraska. So they were offended at the Nebraska Department of Education. They were offended that an associate director for the Nebraska Catholic Conference wanted to be a part of the discussions about state sex education requirements and standards. And they deliberately excluded people like that who had any kind of religious affiliation. This is coming from WND.com. According to the Free Beacon, which obtained state emails on the issue, one state agency worker warned another, quote, "Jeremy is coming on pretty strong." And the second one responded and said, "I know. I really think they want to advocate for abstinence-only education as well as gender identity and sexual orientation, but that is only my assumption." And they were referring to Jeremy Eckler, an associate director of education policy at the Nebraska Catholic Conference, who asked multiple times to be included in an advisory team that was going to discuss plans to teach elementary school students about gender identity and transgender hormone therapy. But the State Department of Education in Nebraska excluded any input from religious education groups. He's a former principal at a Catholic school, and he asked the state agency three different times, what is the process to be included? What is the process to develop these ideas? And eventually he got a Zoom meeting with state officials after he was told that the advisory team was all full up. Sorry, we just don't have any more room for advisors. To know that a tax-funded state entity boxed out the beliefs of such a huge portion of our population is sadly ironic, he said. But later, they obtained internal emails by Free Beacon and by a state board member, Deborah Neary, that showed that the agency, after they said that it was all full up, they included Lisa Schultz, a Planned Parenthood board member, in the curriculum evaluations. Neary said, state board member, said, "I'm very disappointed that none of the folks that I recommended to participate in the Nebraska Department of Education standard writing teams were selected." Then Schultz and two other activists, again, Schultz is the Planned Parenthood person, so Schultz and two others, the other two are the head of Out Nebraska, that would be an LGBT organization. So you got Planned Parenthood and you got the LGBT. And another, the third person, is a professor pledged to support, quote, "the intersection of sexuality and social justice." Those are the ones that were added to the team after they told the former Catholic high school principal, "We're full up. We're full up." This is how conservatives fail to understand that these institutions are not redeemable. This is not transparent to what to most people what is happening, and these people have a an agenda that they're going to do anything they can to pull the strings on, and they're going to keep these institutions from being reformed. We need to shut them down and reform them, and this is one of the reasons why I'm optimistic, because I think that and I've seen this in my own personal life. Sometimes if I don't have, I look at a situation, it's like, well, this is not a good situation, I need to move on or whatever. Sometimes God will shut that down and force me to move on, and then, you know, give help and support in the next situation. And I think that's really what is happening to many of us right now. I think many of us are seeing a lot of these institutions that are failed, that are corrupt, and we are being blocked from them as they are in a downward suicidal spiral, and we don't want to be a part of that. And so I think we are being purged out of a lot of these things, and it is a blessing that we are being purged out of them. Like I say many times about the homeschooling, well, it's a real blessing that a lot of parents have been forced out of these schools, forced into a situation where after a while they realize, hey, you know, I can do this. It's not that hard. It's actually incredibly easy to do a better job than the schools are doing. It's really hard to fail that hard. You have to work really hard to fail your children as much as the formal institutions that we have set up. So moms and mom lawmakers are now responding to the school boards and to the Department of Justice. You have an organization called Moms for America that's now arisen. But again, let's not have these things neutralized by focusing on national organizations. Most of these national organizations that come together, they can help a little bit, but many times, just as we've seen with the Tea Party movement, they are there just to grab cash from people. Hey, I identify with you. I see the same problems you do, and isn't this awful? Send me some money. That type of thing. Make sure that you are focused locally, that you don't have all of your energy and cash and your hopes transferred to some national organization that might be run by some of the same people that have been running these institutions. But one of the things that they said were parents' rights are fundamental and supreme. Yeah, that's right. I am a parental supremacist when it comes to raising kids. I think that they ought to be the ones who are in charge of everything. Real quickly, Reason Magazine, when I talked about the death of David Amess, the member of parliament who was stabbed to death by a 25-year-old Somalian, whose parents came here, they were part of the same corrupt Somalian communist regime that Ilhan Omar's father was a part of. And so both Ilhan Omar's father, as well as the father of this murderer, came to Western society. But now, after this crime, you have the British Home Secretary, Priti Patel, and she is using this as a pretense to take away all anonymity online. Is that really the fundamental issue here? And Reason Magazine is talking about that as well, saying social media is not to blame for the deadly stabbing of a British member of parliament. What they do not cover, however, is the fact, and we need to understand, that Microsoft and the BBC were the two principal motivators behind this coalition that was started in February. The coalition, the C2PA coalition, and that is about making sure that they look at content and ownership. This is a coalition for content provenance and authenticity. By provenance, they mean who did this come from? And then authenticating who it came from. But this was this began as a cooperative effort between Microsoft and the BBC. But understand the hidden hand of government, and it's not really hidden, giving them money, both of them, Microsoft and the BBC. And so, lo and behold, after we have somebody who is murdered, the British government comes out immediately and starts pushing this this tactic that the BBC has been a part of. And what they're doing is they're pulling together software, content creators, Adobe, and TruePic, you know, in terms of creating audio and visual or creating pictures and memes. They want to be able to tag where the memes are coming from, where any content is coming from, audio or visual. They're using software companies, not just the software applications, but also Microsoft, and then CPU manufacturers, Intel, and ARM. They're all a part of this so they can identify the equipment and tie that to a user. That's the provenance area. And so it's not a surprise to me at all that these people who have already been working on making sure that they eradicate all anonymity online and give everybody an online ID, just like in China, that they would immediately jump on this as a solution to a murder that really came about because they did not vet people who were coming into this country as being risks to this country. So they will always make, they'll always use these issues to extend their control in other areas. When we look at, and before we end the program, there were a couple of articles I just wanted to get back to real quickly in the vaccine stack in terms of quickly vaccinating 28 million children age 5 to 11. As a matter of fact, it's already been reported that they have stockpiled 65 million vaccines in child doses. So for this, these youngest kids, 5 to 11, They have the dosage set up as one-third of the adult dosage. You know, they're giving the teenagers the full adult dosage, and I think down to 12. But then all of a sudden they drop it to one-third of the dosage. And, you know, you would have expected, wouldn't you, that they would gradually drop the dosage down instead of a kind of an abrupt situation. But I think it's because they've seen the kinds of reactions that they have with the 12 to 17-year-olds, but also you can imagine that when they start rolling out these vaccines to 5-year-olds and people take their toddlers in, you know, which is what's coming. You take a young child and you get them vaccinated and immediately they get Bell's palsy or they get paralyzed or they get a heart attack, as we've already seen with 2 children who got the doses at CVS instead of getting a flu shot. When that happens, there's going to be a lot of outrage. It's really going to galvanize people, I think, because that is the one thing that's going to galvanize people is seeing young children harmed by this. The White House is rolling out an advertising campaign, of course, to convince parents and kids that the vaccine is safe and effective. And a big part of that, again, is going to be these pastors that are selling that. They said COVID has disrupted. This is part of the ad campaign. COVID has disrupted our kids' lives. It's made school harder. It's disrupted their ability to see friends and families, and it's made youth sports more challenging. No, that wasn't COVID. That was the government that did all that. And that's the government telling you that. See, it's the government that made school harder. It's the government that shut it down, that put masks on kids' faces, that put them in essentially a bizarre behavioral science experiment. It was government that disrupted them being able to see their friends and family. And it's the government that is telling people who are not vaccinated that you'll never participate in any extracurricular activities, sports included. That's all the government. And then Vivek Murthy, who is saying that, says, getting our kids vaccinated, we have the prospect of protecting them, but also getting all those activities back that are so important to our children. Except that they are going to continue to mask them, to put them under all of these physical and sociological and psychological controls. We've had Fox News's Cavuto has tested positive, and even though he has been fully vaccinated, he is now sick. And he uses this as an opportunity to urge people to get vaccinated. How about that? Never ends, does it? While I'm somewhat stunned by this news, doctors tell me that I'm lucky as well. Had I not been vaccinated, with all of my medical issues, this would have been a far more dire situation. But now it's great. Because, you know, even though he's sick and he's got multiple comorbidities, he would never die like Colin Powell, right? No, no, no. The transhumanist cannibal vaccine is your elixir of life. But it doesn't even matter. CNN, at the same time that you got Fox Cavuto saying, well, yeah, I got COVID and I'm sick, but boy, I'm sure glad that I got vaccinated. Because why? Well, CNN's headline is why vaccinated people dying from COVID doesn't mean the vaccines are ineffective. Now, you got Cavuto at Fox News saying, well, I'm glad I'm double vaccinated because that means that, you know, it probably won't kill me. That's what the doctors tell me anyway. But CNN says, well, even if it does kill you, Cavuto, that doesn't mean the vaccines are ineffective. Doesn't, that's the actual headline that Chris Minahan at Information Liberation, he took a snapshot of it. Why vaccinated people dying doesn't mean the vaccines are ineffective. So that they will sell you that regardless. And he points out, he says, your own network at CNN just this weekend reported a new study involving over 600,000 veterans, and they found the Johnson & Johnson COVID vax protection fell from 88% in March, which was assumed, wasn't proven. But after they did a study, they saw that it wasn't 88%. It was actually 3%. Your own network so that they showed the need for immediate boosters. The FDA admitted that the data is extremely lacking for all these booster shots, but that their vaccine advisory panel voted unanimously to approve them anyway, off of a gut feeling. That's right. It's more of a gut feeling rather than based on really, truly serious data, said Patrick Moore, member of the committee, a professor of molecular genetics and biochemistry at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. By the way, that's the School of Medicine that is so intricately connected with this murder for hire, Planned Parenthood and the NIH and the FDA getting fresh, not frozen baby organs, putting them together there at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. And this guy, who's a member of the committee from there, says the data's not strong. So it's kind of more of a gut feeling that, you know, I can just, maybe it's a wallet feeling. Maybe he's feeling it in his back pocket or something. That he can feel it swelling up from the money from Pfizer. I don't know. yeah, it's absolutely insane, isn't it? What is happening? Who would have thought that we would live through such a time? But this is the time that we live in, and it is an opportunity for us to push back against this. It is a very significant time, and relish it. Relish it. Thank you for listening. That's it for today's program. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.